S-R-N.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this special message. How's it going, eh? Today's movie on the Universal National Network is a classic, starring in the two comedic geniuses of North American cinema from the 20th century, Bob and Doug McKenzie. Entitled Strange Brew, it chronicles the heroic adventures of two latter-day Renaissance men, or, to use the correct 20th century terminology, hosers. We give it 3 thumbs up.
Cinderella story, out of nowhere, a former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
One morning, I shot an elephant in my pajamas. How he got in my pajamas, I don't know.
Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell him Silent Breed is people!
Come along, Mr. Neo.
21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts!
Take your sticky paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You are now listening to Cinema Crespo Diesel.
Welcome to episode 52 of Cinema Crespo Diesel. I'm your host, Christopher Crespo, and this is the one-year anniversary show.
Hooray!
Hooray! 52 weeks! We made it!
We finally did it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Again, I'm Christopher Crespo. Here's my host, Drew Cogburn. Drew!
What up?
How you doing, dude?
We're doing, man.
52 episodes, dude. 1 year.
I know. It's crazy. I can't believe how fast the year went by.
That was a quick year of free entertainment for all the people. Hope they enjoyed it. We got a special guest. He was on for episode 20. That was a big deal.
That was a while ago.
That was a while ago. That was, I mean, it doesn't seem that long ago, but it was. I mean, 32 episodes ago. But he is back, the one and only Tom the Beer Guy. Tom!
What's happening, everybody? What's happening? Hey. Thanks for listening to Chris. Yes. He does a great job.
And thanks for coming on, Tom. I appreciate it.
I don't know much about movies. I know a little bit. Used to work on a movie once in a while.
You're in close proximity to Mel Gibson and
but my expertise, Danny Glover. My expertise is in beer, and yes. That covers a pretty wide path there.
Speaking of which, episode 52 is sponsored by Orange Blossom Pilsner, powered by it currently. Drew, what are you drinking over there?
I'm drinking some toasted coconut porter over here. Mm-mm. It's delicious.
I got me a good old OPP, the flagship. You got some new beers though in the pipeline, don't you?
Yeah, I got some cool stuff coming up. I'm busy rascal. I got a bunch of projects going on, but one is I've taken over production of a little brewery over in Spring Hill. It's a 2-hour drive away, so the drive stinks.
Yeah.
Now I still contract brew my OVP, and I still send that out by
right.
the truckload. But the little brewery I'm at now, I'm just making some fun artisanal beers. It's an awesome little Belgian style brewery that's got some neat qualities about it. I'm really knocking out some nice beers over there.
So give us a couple examples of what you're working on. What can the public expect to see in OVP bottles?
It's not going to be in bottle. What's going over there? What I'm doing over there is not going to go in bottles. We're only going to put it in kegs,
okay.
And it'll only be available draft around Florida.
Delicious.
I've got 2 beers that I'm focusing on. One is an heirloom pale ale.
Okay.
Now, a lot of the big thing these days is heirloom and hybrid, you know, kind of an anti-Monsanto type of thing, you know, hybrid.
Most organic and as natural as possible.
Right. And so hybrid is when you take strains of of hops or of barley and you cross them and make them hybridized so they grow the right height or they mature in the right time. And
right.
You know, a lot of qualities are looked for when hybridizing that aren't really, you know, for the for the end product. It was more to make the manufacture and farming of it better
right.
and easier. So
for business and money reasons, not for taste reasons.
Right. And that's so heirloom. You know, everybody knows heirloom tomatoes. Heirloom tomatoes are better tomatoes than the hybrids, and you pay more for them. But you know, it's pretty understood that that's a better product.
Get a higher, better ingredient. So it's obviously gonna be a little more money, but yeah.
So what I found is I found some heirloom malts and heirloom hops that are not hybridized at all. They are just old school original strains of malt and hops.
Nice.
And I make my pale ale with that, and it really is, it's a nice pale ale, but it's also heirloom.
You're not really India an IPA kind of guy. The super hoppy stuff, you kind of burned out on it, right?
Yeah, I'm over the hoppy beers, although they are really, really popular. And a pale ale's not that hoppy. My, you know, IPA starts at like 50 IBUs is the beginning for an IPA. Most IPAs are like 60 BUs, and that's a level of bitterness. That's a bittering unit.
Okay.
And my pale ale's got about 40 BUs.
Oh,
in it.
Okay.
So it's not IPA level hopping.
Okay.
You know, now there's pale ale and then there's India pale ale.
No, okay.
India pale ale is a little bit stronger. It's going to be like 6% alcohol at least, and about 55 or 60 BUs.
Any chance you're working on IPA over there?
Well, I don't like just making the same old, same old. I feel like Van Gogh in the brew house. I really think I'm an artist. I'm an artisan, and I'm not there just to crush out what people want.
Right.
Well, I want people to want what I provide. I just am not going to copy, and I'm not going to just go with fads and stuff. So I've got my own little take on an IPA coming out.
Oh, really?
It is an IRA.
India Red Ale.
So I've made the first batch of it this past week.
Oh,
and it's in tank right now, tasting really good. You know, I've got an idea where a beer is going to go as I taste along the process.
Right.
And I've tried it a few times into fermentation, and I'm really pleased with what we've done. It's going to be a really interesting beer. It's going to, red ales, amber ales, have a very specific kind of malt that you use on those. It's a Crystal 60 Lovibond, which gives that amber color.
Mm.
And it also gives some really neat malty flavor, too. So you take that malty flavor, and then you combine it with a 7% alcohol beer with 65 BUs, you know, nice bittering, you know, and then you've got that little caramel toffee-like notes from the 60 Lovibond crystal
that kind of smooths it all out.
Right, it all just comes together like, you know, one event, like the Mona Lisa. It just is perfect.
I was gonna say that does sound delicious.
Oh, it's I'm really excited about the beer, and it's kind of my take on an IPA. I don't want to just make another IPA. Oh wait, I guess I am making just another IPA. I'm also releasing in February. Now I've got many facets to my brewing. I've got the production brewery that, you know, we contract out, and it's my recipes and my, you know, they brew to my specifications, but I don't actually own the brewery and such. They have a big multi-million-dollar brewery and packaging facility and everything that can really pump out some beer.
Nice.
I don't really have the money for one of those. But
not yet anyway.
But the we are going to release Back in the Day IPA.
Back in the Day IPA.
It's kind of neat. Again, I don't want to just do the same old, same old. IPAs are on fire. Everybody wants IPA, but I'm not just going to follow the herd. What I did was I went back to the roots of the American craft brew movement, and there were some really staple hops that were a part of IPAs back in the day. And actually, craft brewing's been around long enough that there is a Back in the Day. We've been about 30 years.
Yeah,
we're about 30 years into craft brewing. It's really, really kind of neat. So 20 plus years ago, people used Cascade, Chinook, Centennial, and Columbus hops in their IPAs, and mostly Cascade. But those four hops are known as the four C's. And those four C's were the heart and soul of IPAs for a long time.
Yeah.
Then as the craft segment really picked up steam and there was a lot of IPAs on the market, people really wanted to identify and make their own IPA, make a version of their own take, because you just didn't want your IPA to taste like everybody else's IPA.
Right.
So along come just over the years, a bunch of new hybridized hops have come to market, and there's just a plethora of different hops out there. And a way for our good listening audience to understand that is if you think about like apples. Apples are awesome, but there's a bunch of different kinds of apples.
Oh, yeah.
There's tart apples, there's sweet apples, and, you know, there's probably five or eight varieties in your local grocery store of apples. So just kind of think of that with hops as well. There's, you know, a bunch of different strains of hops that have different flavor profiles.
So the ones that the 4Cs, the ones that they were using like 20 years ago, people have... So many people wanted to use other strains to get away from that. Now they're not being used at all anymore.
Like I wouldn't say they're not
like the
being
old school way now.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not being used at all. It's just people have so tried to
get
you know,
away from
make
that.
Their IPA, you know, its own kind of IPA that they'll use, you know, new hops to kind of give it a different character.
Yeah.
And I think along the way, a lot of people have lost focus of just how wonderful those citrusy, almost grapefruity kind of characters that come through those 4Cs are. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to release this. I use some of the old malt bills, some of just old school malts in there. It's really a simple IPA, but in the we did a test batch, a four barrel test batch of it up in the big brewery.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up with 24 slim kegs of it. We shot it out into the market, and I got rave reviews on this beer.
Nice.
So I think it's going to go along well. And it's funny that, you know, if you think about it, this is what IPAs were back in the day. Mm. But now they're not. This is not what IPAs are. So to be different, I did what we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of what we're doing now. So that's how I set
it back to old school. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that's how I set myself aside on it. It's got the label's pretty neat. It's got an old rod, you know, an old hot rod as the label.
Yes, it's a symbolized classic. It's a classic style. That is interesting now that the craft beer movement is old enough and styles have evolved enough that there are now like old school ways of doing things. And now you can start doing throwbacks to craft beers from 20, 30 years ago. That's pretty fun.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, I've watched the craft. I've been in this, been on this ride every year of those 30 years, I'll tell you. And I've watched so much happen. It's neat to watch that a lot of breweries owners, craft brewery owners, Sierra Nevada and Rogue, for just to come off the top of my head, are now passing their businesses off to their sons.
Generational things.
So we got some second generation, you know, craft brewery owners coming up there,
as opposed to selling out to someone bigger and letting some corporation just swallow them up. Which I'm sure a lot of these craft brewers probably getting a lot of offers from the big brewers. Like, let's just swallow these guys up and then not have to worry about them.
And some of them take those offers.
Yeah, you know, some of those offers are pretty good. Some people are happy to just cash out. Some people want to keep making beer.
Yeah, you know, it's your passion. Some people, and that's one thing I think that's neat about the craft segment, is that it's driven by passion. It's not driven by an effort to make dollars. Now, certainly we all want to make some dollars, but I don't think that's the main goal when somebody really starts a craft brewery.
It's like starting a rock band, you know, like a real rock band. You're not getting into a rock band because you want to become
rich.
You know, super rich and famous. No. You're not supposed to anyway. There are plenty of, you know, douchebags that do get into music because they just want to be popular.
But it's a passion to music that brings you there.
But they're supposed to be, being in a rock band is supposed to want to be about being in a rock band and playing in garages and in bars. And if you get popular and you make money, that's awesome. But it's
all
not
the better,
right? Yeah, but that's not what it's about.
You know, and I'd hate to live the life where my driving force was dollar bills. You know,
right.
I mean, what a shallow life. No passion. Your passion is stacking. And it's like, really? That's what you got, huh?
You're busting rhymes over here. Passion is stacking. All right, well, those beers sound delicious. Can't wait to try those. This OBP we're drinking right now is great. This show is now sponsored. This episode is sponsored by OBP, powered by OBP. I want to talk to you in the second half of the show a little about what your plans for the future for OBP believe you were talking about, because obviously all these beers are going to be under your OBP brand. So I would like to talk a little bit more about, you know, what your big plans are for down the road. But first, we got to get the show started. Drew, would you mind grabbing the Crespo Diso Randomizer 9000, which is all the way over there? And while I get this started, let's get the show started. Like we do every week, here we go. Tom, if you don't mind, please. Choose something from the Crespo Diso Randomizer and give it to Drew so he can verify that it's still on the Netflix, because they just a week ago took like 90 movies and TV shows off of the Netflix service. You know, licenses, the deals, contracts, they expire.
Sure.
You know, and then sometimes also they get rid of things because people don't watch them. So why let them take up bandwidth if no one's gonna watch it. Why leave My Blue Heaven on there if no one's gonna watch it?
Right, right.
Which is a shame because I love My Blue Heaven. So we got a thumbs up. Drew's saying we're good. So Tom, if you don't mind, what is this week's Netflix Instant Pick of the Week?
Kon-Tiki.
Oh, all right. That's the one I watched pretty recently. Very good movie. It's about a real life expedition. Was it Norwegian? Is it Norwegian, Drew? Does it say in the?
It's blah 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 blah.
Swedish. Swedish.
Doesn't say. It just says explore Thor Heyerdahl.
Like no Thor.
Yeah, Thor.
It's Thor. Thor. He. This is like 1920s, 1930s. He wanted to prove that South Americans went across the Pacific to the Philippines, and they're the ones that discovered the Philippines first. Everyone at that time thought people came from Europe, and he's like, no, South Americans discovered it first. And they're like, well, how could they have gone that way? And he said they made a raft. They made a raft out of wood, and they just floated across the ocean. They used the currents, and they got across. People were saying that's impossible. You couldn't be done. So what does he do? He makes a raft with a bunch of dudes, and they sail across the Pacific on just a raft that they made with a sail, no motorized, no nothing. They did this in the 20s, the 30s, and it was a success. Spoiler alert, obviously, because, I mean...
He made it.
Because he made it. He lived to tell the story, but he made it. It was a huge deal. They made a movie about it called Kon-Tiki, K-O-N-T-I-K-I.
Correct.
And it's great. It's a really visceral movie because it's all... They shot it on the water, like no green screen or nothing like that, you know? So, you see them out like on a big expanse of water, and like the big waves are rocking the boat and stuff, and it's really cool to watch. There's a crazy scene with a shark. Like, I don't even want to give away what happens, but there's one really crazy scene.
Crazy scene with the shark.
Yeah.
Says it all.
They have to, like, oh man, I don't even want to see it.
And says nothing.
No, the shark doesn't say nothing, does it? No, it's not a Pixar movie. It's not Finding Nemo 2. But it's a great film. I really enjoyed it. And it's on a Netflix Instant Pick of the Week. It made The Purge. Good job. Good job, guys. Congratulations. So there you go. Good pick, Tom. Good job.
I want to give out the shout out to the Trailer Park Boys.
The Trailer Park Boys.
You ever watch that?
I've seen a little bit of it. I've seen the TV show. And they've also made some movies, too.
Yeah. They got a new movie coming out on 420 of this year.
Do they really?
Nice.
And how many movies is that? Like three or four?
That'll be
now?
Their third movie, I believe.
Their third one.
And they have their eighth season they're about to drop as well.
Man. They've been around for a while. Yeah, because I did hear about them back in 2003, I think, when Drew was living with a Canadian fellow.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I was. Yeah, he was Canadian, wasn't he? Canadian.
That's how and he was like, hey, you guys, hear about this Trailer Park Boys? That's a pretty bad Canadian accent. But he's a nice guy. Good show.
Do you know a boot? You got to say a boot.
He didn't say it. He didn't have any boots or A's. So, Drew. We got the Netflix, not Netflix, you got the box office review?
Yes, sir.
All right, what do we got? What's let's start with the movie that we saw.
Ooh.
Which looks like it's number 16.
All right. Well, starting off number 16 this week, we have Mandela, A Long Walk to Freedom. Had a weekend gross of $1.19 million. Total gross of $7 on a budget of unlisted on Box Office Mojo.
Man, it looked like that movie probably cost at least 30, 40 million. I mean, it's an epic, epic film.
Well, yeah.
It was, what, 2 hours and 20 minutes about?
Something like that.
It's a pretty long movie, but it's Mandela's whole life. It's everything. It's from when he was a young man, as an attorney, like in his 20s, all the way up through when he became president.
And 27 years of being in prison.
Oh, yeah, there's that part in the middle. I think it was like 37.
Whatever. It's a ridiculous amount of time.
It was insane. So, obviously a very timely movie with the passing of...
R.I.P.
Of President.
Now, Obama. It's kind of weird. Was that movie already in planning before he had passed?
Oh, it was already done before he had passed.
So, how weird that they were working on this movie and he passed before it dropped.
And he actually... they set up a screening for him. He was able to watch the movie with his family. And they all liked it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, they all really, really appreciate it. They said that they did a good job with it.
So he could lay down and call his life done after he saw the movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole thing is capped off right there.
He's going, man, great movie. What else I got to do?
That may be why he finally died. Because he was fighting for a while there at the end at 94. No. He was sick, and the media was ready to declare him dead for real, for like over and over and over, to the point where his family was like, stop it. He's not dead. We'll let you know when he dies. But probably that's what happened. The movie came out. He watched the movie. Idris Elba's amazing as him. It's like, well, we got one of the best actors out there right now playing me. You did a great job.
Even as he did good, even as old Mandela.
Even as old Mandela, he's very believable as an old man. Idris Elba was great.
Oh, and they got his shirts down really well.
That's one thing I did notice.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
It's like they got his wardrobe down.
Yeah,
Batman. Yeah, like this is Mandela for sure.
It is.
They found his. They just went to his closet. Like, you're not wearing these anymore, are you, buddy? You can pass these
Some
on.
Some of
the
shirts were great.
They're great.
Nice.
It's a good movie. Would you say, Drew?
Yeah, it was totally worth watching.
Yeah.
If you're into those, you know, historical biographical pieces, you know, if that's not your cup of tea, then you're going to think this movie's really boring.
It's a type of movie that could be played in like high schools for older classes, you know, junior and senior classes, colleges, because it is, you know, very steeped in history. Obviously it is a movie, so things are going to be embellished or characters are going to be squished together to make one character, you know, just to save time. Because even at 2 hours and 20 minutes, when you're covering that much time.
Yeah, 94-year-old dude.
You covered roughly 60 to 70 years of one man's life, and those are very busy 60 to 70. Even when he was in prison, he was doing shit, you know, like prison reform and stuff, you know. No matter where he was, he had to change the atrocities around him. He was like compelled to do so.
We should all have that,
right? Imagine more people were like that. That's why he was so special, you know? So much happened in his life that even at 2 hours and 20 minutes, things felt like some things were rushed, you know, like some things were it was one way and then all of a sudden boom, it just changed. And like for example, small example, while he's in prison, when they show up, he goes in with him and his you know, quote, co-conspirators or whatever, his little group, the ANC he was with. It was like him and 5 or 6 other people got convicted together. And one of the guys was a white guy, a South African or Dutch guy. So when they all went to prison together, they were giving them, they made them strip down and they gave them their prison uniforms. They gave the white guy trousers and then they gave all the black guys shorts. And they said, boys, get shorts. So, you know, it's their way of demeaning all of them. So they're like, all right, this is messed up or whatever. We put on our shorts. And then Mandela's like, he gets the guys together. He's like, listen, this place is horrible, because they treated them very terribly. So this place is horrible. We have to do a lot of reform, but we're going to start small. You know, for example, I'm going to get us trousers, you know, so that's how they would start. And then there's a scene where he confronts the warden and like they're talking about something. And then he's the warden. Oh, by the way, I just want to let you know, I put in a request for trousers. And the warden like smiles like that'll be the day or something like that. You know, like it's a big deal. And then they just cut to a couple scenes later. Some guy just shows up with pants and just starts giving pants out.
Like trousers for you guys.
Trousers for you guys. Like so it made it just seem like all he did was put in a request and they got it. You know, there was more to that. There was a struggle. It was all about the struggle and the reform, the change. But it just went through so quickly, and a lot of things in this movie happen like that, where it's just broad strokes. They show you like just they leave out a lot of details, because then the movie's gonna be what, 3.5-4 hours long.
I couldn't take that.
You know, yeah, it would be. Then you're talking about an HBO miniseries, so it's weird how they're trying to compress so much into what, one little period of time, a whole life. And how do you tell a whole life in 2.5 hours? You know,
exactly,
especially one like his, right? But yeah. All that being said, I think they did a pretty good job of doing it.
Yeah, no, wasn't a bad movie at all.
Wouldn't be surprised to see Elba get nominated.
I'm sure.
Oscar, Best Actor, at least nominated.
You know. He probably won't win, but I don't know, he'll be nominated.
The Chiwetel Ejiofor, man, at 12 Years a Slave, Tom. That's a crazy movie, man. Ejiofor is so good. All right, let's do the top five. Why don't we?
All right. Well, number five this week, we have American Hustle. Had a weekend gross of $13.2 million, total gross of $88.7 million. On a budget of 40.
American Hustle. This is a good one. Tom, you should check this one out. I'm telling you.
Nice.
Well, are you familiar? Do you remember the whole ab scam thing from the early 80s? Late 70s, early 80s? Remember the time period? I think it was late 70s. No. It was when the FBI brought in some con artists, some confidence men into the fold in the FBI to help them rope in. They started a sting for one thing, and the sting evolved into something bigger, and it evolved into them giving bribes to politicians, and then just roping all the politicians in for general scumbaggery. You
Man,
know?
We ought to try that today.
We should do it again.
Yeah, they should keep doing it, right? But the movie though is more complicated than that in terms of characters. You know, like the con man. At first, he's a con man. He's unscrupulous. He's a douche. He's not cool. But by the end, he ends up being one of the more sympathetic characters in a movie. You know, it's that type of thing.
You kind of feel for him.
You feel for him at the end. It's like, oh, this guy, you know. Look. And then, like, the FBI guy is like, oh, this guy ends up being a douche. Like, screw this dude. You know, such an idiot.
Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper's kind of a douche.
Bradley Cooper's good at playing douches. He might be a douche in real life. Who knows? He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, but if he's that good at playing a douche, he probably is a douche.
Ben Affleck's good at movie douchery.
Hey, guess what?
He's Batman.
And a douche.
I haven't met the guy. Have you met Ben Affleck, Tom?
No.
So we don't know. Did you meet him, Drew?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Drew knows. So American Hustle, it's good. It's cool. Christian Bale's great. Bradley Cooper's good. Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence are both awesome. I would say they should both be nominated for awards. They should both win awards.
They should both win no bra awards.
The bra budget
was nil.
Was nil because all that money went into the hair budget for this. All right, so what's number four?
Number four this week, The Wolf of Wall Street had a weekend gross of $13.4 million. Total gross is $63.29 on a budget of $100.
Got news from Johnny the Hater. Word from Johnny the Hater.
Oh, word from Johnny the Hater Johnny hates The Wolf of Wall Street.
Johnny hates The Wolf of Wall Street.
Of course he does, because he's Johnny the Hater.
Johnny the Hater
hates The Wolf. Why? Why does he hate Scorsese movies?
He doesn't always hate Scorsese movies.
I know. Why does he hate this one?
He thinks it's pointless.
A little long, probably long-winded.
He thinks it's excessively long and pointless, and he just doesn't like it.
Interesting.
I think
so. He doesn't like titties and drug use.
He doesn't like titties and drug use. I think he's wrong. I think he's missing. He thinks the movie is pointless. A lot of people are actually saying that they think the movie is pointless because they think it glorifies
that is the
white collar behavior.
But that's the point.
Criminal behavior.
I thought that was the point of the movie, to try and point out the absolute absurdity of it all.
It is the point of it. Yeah, and our complicity in it. You know.
Yeah.
You know. The movie. A lot of people are like talking about how in The Wolf of Wall Street, because it's all about a stockbroker who takes advantage of the little people, you know, at first, and then he takes advantage of the wealthy people. But still, that was his MO, taking advantage of people to make his own money. People were complaining that the movie doesn't show the victims, doesn't show the 75-year-old old lady sitting at her kitchen table.
Hungry.
Yeah, hungry, and, you know, with zeros in her bank account. And my point is, why would that even be in the movie?
Yeah,
because the movie is about the stockbroker, okay? He's the central character. The movie has his voiceover. It's Leo DiCaprio. There's times when he looks directly at the camera. He breaks the fourth wall to talk to the audience. You know, he's selling you in this movie.
He pulls Zach Morris.
So it's his movie. He pulls Zach Morris. So it's his movie. So if this movie is sold from his perspective, then why are we going to see the victims? He didn't care about the victims. He didn't go see them. He didn't sit down with the old lady at the table and like, oh, you're hungry. To him, the victims were voices on the phone and dollar signs in his bank account.
And that's what we got.
So that's what you get in the movie. You know, I think to show the victims would be almost disingenuous. It would be unnecessary sentimentality, you know, trying to make you feel extra, trying to point you one way or the other. We shouldn't have to tell you how to feel about this guy. That's another thing. Because, like, the movie doesn't come out and say this Jordan Belfort guy is... People are saying the movie doesn't come out and say he's horrible. I think it does, because it shows him doing horrible things.
I was about to say, watch the movie.
Watch the movie. He's doing horrible things
the whole
time.
He's a terrible person.
Yeah, if you think he's cool at any point, then I think you're a terrible person. But a lot of people are saying, oh, the movie glorifies him as a character, and it makes him super cool. And I don't know. I think a lot of people are missing the boat on this one. I also think in 10 years, people aren't going to remember any of this hysteria. Or even 10 years. Even remember when Zero Dark Thirty came out last year, and then there's big national debate about showing torture in movies?
Yes.
And whether this movie was condoning the use of torture.
Correct.
Because it showed it as something that factually happened.
Because it's what factually happened.
And people are like, this movie's condoning torture because it's depicting it.
Yeah.
Same thing's happening with this movie, where, oh, it's showing blue-collar crime. So
it's condoning it.
And the rewards of it as well as the peril. So it's condoning it.
So the next action movie, is it going to be, you know, hailed for condoning murder because it shows murder?
They do. Those are the same people that say violent video games cause kids to shoot up schools.
Dude, if that's the case, you all would be dead.
Right.
Everybody listening to this, you'd all be dead if video games beget violence, because I play so many video games I would have killed everybody in the world by now.
This guy. if art begat violence, you know, how much violence
Lord.
Has been in art and, you know, literature and poetry. You know, I mean, come on. This is going back.
Hey, yeah.
In the Bible.
Well, I mean, people are just naturally violent, so it makes sense that it, you know, intrudes on everything we do.
Right. So I don't know. I think people just need to drink more beer and rice.
Chill out.
Chill the F out. Just watch the movie, right? So maybe they were just offended by so many titties. Tom, there's so many titties in this movie.
So many. Oops. Ridiculous amounts.
The Wolf of Wall Street?
The Wolf of Wall Street.
And probably more drug use than Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's a lot of drug use, and it's ridiculous.
There is a scene in that movie that rivals anybody being messed up in a movie ever. Leonardo DiCaprio is literally crawling to his car. Literally crawling. Like, he can't even get up on his hands and knees. He is dragging himself military style into his car.
He has to roll himself down stone steps because he can't get... Because he's all looted out. He's on lewds.
Lewds? What year is this set in?
That's the thing. It's in the 90s, but they're like, look, man, because at this point, Quaaludes are like stock
gone
brokers.
For a while.
It was like they're... like Unicorn, you know, it was like the Leprechaun. Like, oh, we found some lewds, man. Like, these are old as hell.
I found Quaaludes in high school.
You found them?
Yeah, I found them.
There you go. You found Quaaludes in high school.
I went to high school a little before you guys, though.
Oh, well, that's when their lewds were. Yeah, you guys want some lewds?
Yeah, exactly.
I got my milk. I got my bologna sandwich.
And my lewds.
And I got my lewds, right? Was that?
Oh, the stupid kids used to smoke them things.
That doesn't seem right.
Yeah, that's wrong.
That sounds terrible.
Freebasing cues. Wolf of Wall Street, a lot of drugs, a lot of nakedness. And you know what? That's the thing. Scorsese doesn't normally traffic in nudity. His films actually have very, very,
very little
nudity
in
them, even when he has like sex scenes and stuff. So all that stuff's in there for a reason. It's not gratuitous, even though on the surface it seems like it, because there's so much of it. But he knows what he's doing. He's a master filmmaker.
Yes, sir.
Let's get to the top three. Drew, what's number three?
No, number three this week, The Hobbit, The Destination of Smaug.
Smaug.
We can gross $16.25 million. Total gross of $229.6 on a budget of a lot of money.
Let's see. It also made, $527 million internationally.
So we're looking at almost a billion already.
$756
million
worldwide.
4 weeks. Almost $1 billion.
That's why they make these movies.
Peter Jackson knows what he's doing.
Peter Jackson knows what he's doing. Although he's hinted at interviews lately when he makes this last Hobbit movie comes out next year.
Please tell me he's done.
He is totally done.
Please tell me he's done with Tolkien. I can't take anymore.
He's been making J.R. Tolkien movies now for like
15 years.
15 years, yeah. With a short break to make a King Kong and The Lovely Bones, which was a horrible piece of shit. But The Hobbit's okay.
It was better than the first one.
My brother saw it.
And?
He liked it.
What did Little Crespo think?
He thought it was cool. He thought it was good. You a Lord of the Rings fan at all, Tom?
Vaguely, not really.
Yeah.
That sci-fi, I guess
fantasy.
It's not sci-fi, that fantasy,
fantasy.
Kind of thing doesn't really twist mine.
It's definitely all sword and sandal sorcery type of thing. Is definitely very geeky, you know. And then there are levels of it too, where I can't get too deep into that stuff. Like Tolkien is pretty much as far as I get into a lot of that fantasy. Even The Hobbit's like stretching for me, you know. It's like, come on, guys, it's getting kind of boring. I'm kind of tired of these dwarves.
Lots of dwarves.
I'm tired of these movies about dwarves. I can't believe how little I care about these freaking dwarves that these movies are centered on. Give me some more hobbits, less dwarves. What's the number two movie? The actual new movie that came out this week.
Number two movie is Paranormal Activity: The Marked Ones. Had a weekend gross of $18.2 million, same as the total on a budget of $5 million. Bank.
Yeah, their movies are super cheap, yo. Even $5 million, that's an upper end budget for a Paranormal Activity film. You see any of these Paranormal Activity movies, Tom?
No, not into horror either. I don't call that entertainment.
Horror is generally not my thing, but I also say, you know, a good movie is a good movie, despite the genre, you know.
Right.
These Paranormal Activity movies, I only watch...
The odd number.
I have a policy where I only watch odd numbered Paranormal Activity movies. So I saw the first one. Which was
how
no,
many are there?
There now with this one, this there are the, this is the fifth one. Fifth. Even though this isn't part of the normal canon.
So
I'll explain.
That means you have to see it, Chris.
No, I don't. I'll explain. Here we go. Because I saw the first Paranormal Activity, and that one, you know, that one's interesting because it was so cheap. It cost literally just a few thousand dollars, and there's some really cool special effects in there. So all the actual horror stuff, the scary, spooky house stuff was cool. I appreciated that. All the stuff between all the scary scenes, the characters and the talking and the story and the drama, horrible, the worst. I actually ended up fast-forwarding through a lot of that stuff.
Just when filler.
It was. Absolute filler. Just an excuse for all the cool effects. The second one, skipped out on. Mostly, the main reason I skipped out on it is because it was it was because it was the same dynamic as the first movie. People were being haunted, but they added a baby. There's a baby to the mix, so I'm not into movies where like babies are in danger and stuff. You know, it just weirds me out. So I skipped it. I saw the third one because I was interested in the directors. I like they got new directors, right? So I ended up seeing the first one and the third one. They put out the fourth one. I skipped that. I got to see the fifth one. So I saw 1 and 3, skipped 2 and 4. I got to see Paranormal Activity 5, which comes out this October.
Oh, so this is not in the canon of regular Paranormal Activity. This is a side thing.
This is a side thing. Paranormal Activity, the marked one, did its own thing. And since it made $18 million on a $5 million
gonna be,
budget,
there's
going to
be the Mark 2s.
Paranormal Activity, the marked ones 2.
No, the marked 2s.
The marked 2s. I like the marked ones 2, T-O-O.
So are they doing that for passion or for dollars?
Dollars, my friend. Actually, they're doing this one for dineros, dolares, because Paranormal Activity, the marked ones, is it's centered on a Latin culture. It's a Spanish kid in a barrio, because it's not just a Spanish neighborhood. It's got to be a barrio.
Yeah.
And the reason they're doing this is because, for whatever reason, the Hispanic population, they turn out for supernatural films, movies involving ghosts and exorcists and supernatural type stuff. For example, the last Paranormal Activity movie, I read for all the total tickets sold, 17% of the tickets sold were bought by Hispanic moviegoers total. The national population of Hispanics in the U.S. is 16%. So they're buying more than their, you know, proportionate
share.
Yeah. So they're turning out for more. What was another one? The Last Exorcism that came out last year, opening weekend, was like 60% Hispanic turnout. So the studio sees this. Who is this? Paramount. Paramount sees this and like, oh, Hispanics love these Paranormal Activity movies. Let's just make one set
Hispanic.
In a Spanish neighborhood with Spanish characters. Hispanic supernatural exploitation. Boom. You know, that's all it is. They're just trying to get that money. Trying to get those dolares, and it worked.
So they didn't think that would make a wonderful story.
They did not give a shit.
They saw brown people and dollar signs and put the two together.
They did not give a shit. They took the same thing, they put it in a poor neighborhood and added guns,
yep.
And they're like, that makes it Spanish.
Yep.
Racist.
Yep. Someone's making arroz con pollo somewhere.
Yeah, it's a little insulting. They're like, oh, Hispanics, they believe in Santeria, so we'll have a witch doctor.
Yep.
Black, well, you know, I mean... Racism.
Well, it worked, Chris.
It does work.
It worked.
Racism does work. I mean, of course, the pandering works.
They're laughing to the bank.
They are. They're laughing all the way to the bank. They'll be laughing next January when they come out with Paranormal Activity.
Dos.
The marked ones, dos. No, mas marked.
It's a good thing you're full-blooded Puerto Rican. Or I'd feel a little bad about all that right now.
Would you?
Yep.
No, why?
A little bit.
Why? What about last week when we were doing Japanese voice?
Oh, that was
when we were
fun.
Talking about 47 Ronin. That wasn't...
Hey, it's not my fault that everybody offensive. In that movie besides Keanu Reeves
I talk like this.
Everyone, I talk like a deez.
It's so weird, man. Because they're not going to put a whole movie in Japanese for American audiences. So they're like, all right, we'll just have them speak in accents in English.
So bad.
So we all talk like this, and he read.
Yeah.
And this movie is not a racist.
And at number one this week.
Number one this a week.
Frozen. Weekend gross $20.722 million. Total gross at $297.8.
Holy crap.
On a budget of $150.
Add another $342 million internationally. We're at $639 million worldwide.
Man, 7 weeks and still. This is number 7 weeks later and still number one movie.
That's kind of ridiculous. Was it number one last week?
No, it wasn't.
No, because it's a holiday week. It's the last week before kids can go back to school. So the families finally take them out. And it's not like there's any other family movie out. Are there any other family movies out?
Oh, The Hobbit.
Yeah, there's a giant dragon in that. Is that really for families? Would you take a kid to see a movie with a giant dragon, Tom?
Sure.
Walking with Dinosaurs.
Walking with Dinosaurs, yeah. Ooh, that one's not doing good, is it?
Tyler Perry Made a Christmas.
No, they're not going to see the Tyler Perry movie. Well, Walking with Dinosaurs is bombing. Oof.
I saw a movie on New Year's Day.
What did you see, sir?
There's a part of me that thinks you can guess first try.
What would you see on New Year's Day? That's
now. Remember, I'm pretty sophomoric about my movies. Not all
did
that.
Did you see Anchorman 2?
Bam! That's all I had to say. Was sophomoric.
Nice.
All
right.
What did you think of it?
It was not as good as Anchorman 1. Yeah. It was cutesy and fun, and I can't help but ask why that wasn't in the top five. Is it not really? Is it not selling well? Or
it's number six this week.
Yeah, it barely fell out because number five is at 13 million, and number six, Anchorman 2 at 11 million.
Yeah, I was really surprised not to hear it. I didn't feel like it'd been out that long.
Well, it's doing okay though. For an R-rated comedy, it's already at 109 million dollars here, which is pretty good. The first Anchorman didn't even make that much money.
No way.
Yeah,
so this is outsold.
I believe it is making more money. I can tell you right now, this one is already at $144 million worldwide, whereas the first Anchorman is even, it should be here, because the first one made all its money, it got popular on DVD. It was one of those things where after it came out, the first one only made $85 million total in the U.S. box office. This one's already at 109, so it's making more money, but it feels like it should be making more because the marketing was pushing it so hard. You know?
Really
pushed
hard.
It hard, but really the content wasn't that great. Yeah. They were kind of reaching at a couple places.
I think that's why they were pushing it so hard.
Like, you know? It's a shark.
But you would appreciate the main theme of the movie, though, I would think, with the whole mainstream journalism has been dumbed down to the point of we're not getting the news anymore. Now we're just getting a bunch of pablum to drive up ratings. You know, if that's something you would appreciate,
oh, indeed.
Knowing you.
Indeed.
And so I give Anchorman 2 credit, at least for not just being a mindless sequel, for actually wanting to say something with the content that they put out there. So I can appreciate that.
Good point.
You know, they did the same thing, Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, with the other guys, the action comedy Will Ferrell did with Marky Mark.
Never saw it.
You never saw that
nope.
one?
Nor I.
It's pretty funny. It has its moments. It's definitely like a spoof of action comedies, you know, like Bad Boys, that type of thing. But it's also meant to be a whole takedown of the too big to fail mentality, you know, big corporations, CEOs being bailed out. There's a whole, the movie ends during the credits, all this infographics about how salaries for CEOs have inflated while CEOs for the average worker have remained stagnant, and all about income disparity and shit. The movie itself really doesn't do much to say anything about this stuff. At least they were trying to, you know, and it's almost worth checking out the movie just to see all that stuff, you know. These guys could just be making dumb comedies, but they are actually trying to do something with it. But yeah, it's still a comedy sequel. It's not going to be as good as the original. You know, that doesn't exist. That's a unicorn. The comedy sequel that's better than the original doesn't exist. New movie is coming out on DVD. Runner. You saw this one, Tom, right?
Negative.
I'm pretty sure you did.
Runner.
This is the one with Justin Timberlake and Ben Affleck. I remember I was going to the movie theater. I ran into you. I was going to see Gravity. And you were with your special lady friend, and you were coming out of a movie. You said you saw Runner.
Man, I don't think it was Runner.
Yeah, are you sure?
Nah, I'm 99% sure.
What was the movie you saw?
That's why I can't debate you too hard on this, because I can't recall what movie that was.
Man, see.
Then it was probably Runner, because I heard that movie was pretty crappy.
I heard it was pretty bad, but I remember you said it was good, but then the review said it was bad, and then I never saw it. And then I was hoping that you would remember it and might have something to say about it, but you don't even remember it.
Wow.
You don't even think it was that movie. That's cool. Online poker. It was like Justin Timberlake. Yeah, you went to another country.
Oh,
Ben Affleck was a bad guy on a boat.
Yeah, I remember.
Vaguely.
No.
Is it coming back vaguely?
Right. That's okay. That's right. That's the one my girlfriend wanted to see. Was just kind of there.
All right, right on. So it was one of those that was kind of forgettable, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, if you forgot about it, I would hope it'd be a forgettable
movie.
That
would be to the final.
Counting cards and stuff, and the dude was really good at poker.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. I didn't actually see it. But now that it's on DVD, maybe I'll watch it so I can forget about it.
Yeah. You're yawning, thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Drew, what's new coming out in theaters?
New in theaters, we have The Legend of Hercules.
Legend of Hercules. This looks like a hunk of garbage.
Yes.
But it might, well, yeah.
It's got Scott Adkins in it.
Does it really?
Yes.
Why? Why is he in such a bad movie?
Why? Because awesome. He's the king of B movies. This definitely should. Why is Scott Atkinson this movie? Because this is a B movie that they're trying to push on us.
Directed by a guy who did Cliffhanger. Remember Cliffhanger from the 90s with
Sloan?
Yeah. Rennie Harlan. He also did Die Hard 2. And what was one of his other bigger ones? He did Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger. I think Daylight, I think, with Stallone, the one with the tunnel and the... Anyway, he hasn't made many movies in a while, and he made a couple of stinkers. I think he's the one who directed Cutthroat Island, which bankrupted Orion, I think it was. And he's been in director jail for a while. But he busted out.
And he's going to be going back.
He's
going
to be going back because this movie looks like a hunk of garbage. And it's starring the guy from Twilight. Or one of the guys from Twilight.
Whoever that is.
Kellan Lutz.
Like I said, whoever that
even,
is.
His name even sounds like Ignoramus. Right? If I met some guy named Kellan Lutz, I would automatically assume that...
Stupid.
Dumb as a bag of bricks.
Yep.
Kellan Lutz is what I would name a bag of bricks. You know. Don't you name bags of bricks? I name my bags of bricks. That's Kellan Lutz. That's bag of bricks number two. What else is coming out?
One Chance, that weird opera movie that we saw a preview for.
Based on a guy who... was on the X Factor in UK. It's like a true story about a fat guy who sings opera. Do you like opera, Tom?
I respect it. I understand the craftsmanship behind it, but it's not something I really enjoy.
You wouldn't go out to...
No.
Pavarotti's in town. You wouldn't go check him out?
No.
Is Pavarotti still alive?
I used to work opera at the theater a lot.
I don't know. Let's find her out. Let's
Did
find
you?
Out.
Yeah, I've heard...
So you've heard, your share.
Oh, yeah.
So you've heard enough to know...
It's not my bag.
Not your thing. That's good enough. On top of those two movies coming out, there's a couple. Is he alive? Drew, are you checking to see if Pavarotti's
alive?
Yeah,
dead at 71 in 2007.
No, he did die. Rest in peace, Pavarotti. In 2007? Oh, that's a while ago. Oh, man.
September 6th, 2007, he died.
My bad, bro. Also coming out in theaters, we have movies that, you know, how they, in December, Tom, they'll put out movies in a couple of cities so they can get qualified for the Oscars in February. And then they don't expect these movies to actually make a lot of money, so they'll just do a limited release in December, and then in January, when they dump all these really bad movies on us, they'll also release some of these ones from December. Like, for example, last year, we didn't get to see Zero Dark Thirty until the middle of January. You know, mention Zero Dark Thirty again.
Freaking awesome movie.
January 10th, next weekend, this weekend coming up, we're getting a few movies that are expanding from December. We're getting the new Coen Brothers film, Inside Llewyn Davis, which is, you see, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? The one with George Clooney, and it's like the Odyssey. He's trying to get home.
Man, I want to say I didn't, but you'll probably tell me you saw me coming out of the movie.
I saw you there, Tom. You were singing this music on the way out of the theater. You're like, this is the greatest. That one got really popular because of the music. It kind of made bluegrass pretty popular here in America for a little while again, like around 2000, 2001. Obviously, Fargo, Big Lebowski. You know, people at least heard of those movies. Raising Arizona.
Sure.
This is another one of theirs, and it's supposed to be one of their best, like Fargo-level good, Inside Llewyn Davis. And it's about the 60s New York City folk music scene. So that could be fun. You know?
Interesting.
And Justin Timberlake's in that one, too.
Huh?
Good old JT.
Busy rascal.
He is a busy guy. Good for him. Super talented, too. Also coming out, Her, the Joaquin Phoenix movie, where he falls in love with Scarlett Johansson's voice.
Yes.
On a phone or his AI system or whatever.
Whatever the F it is.
And then Lone Survivor, the Mark Wahlberg war movie about the troop of guys, of Marines that go into Afghanistan. And
spoiler, only one survives.
Yeah, spoiler alert. There's only one survivor in Lone Survivor. So there we go. We got all those movies come out, so I doubt we'll be going to see Legend of Hercules.
Nope.
So if you're hoping for our review of that, we apologize.
Because you're not going to get it.
Let's take a break.
All right.
We got the Crespo Disco here. I got a song queued up. Philip Glass. we're all Philip Glass fans here, right? Right?
Sure.
Yeah? Philip Glass Ensemble? What do you call that? That's chamber music?
Of sorts.
Right. Anyway, so I grabbed a song that's off of two different movie soundtracks. Originally, it was on the soundtrack for Koyaanisqatsi.
Which is a weird movie.
Weird movie. You may have, maybe, Tom, but this is from the early 80s. Produced by Francis Ford Coppola, and it's an hour and a half movie, but it's not like a story with characters or anything. It's just a sequence of images. It's kind of like... Planet Earth type stuff, you know, the Discovery Channel type stuff, but before all that stuff was on
TV. What's the name of it?
Koyaanisqatsi, Life Out of Balance.
Interesting.
And there's actually three of them. There's that. I forgot what the second one's called. And the third one's called, like, Nakoyaanisqatsi. And that one's on the on the Netflix Instant. And that one's more about technology and stuff. But it's all about mankind and how we're on Earth. And they show a lot of natural images. And then they show, like, a time-lapse shot of an intersection in Tokyo. And then they show, like, you know, a time-lapse shot of a shopping mall. And people walk around there.
And then ants.
And then a time-lapse shot of a bunch of ants and stuff, juxtaposition. Yeah, yeah. And then really cool music playing over it. A lot of Philip Glass type stuff. So I grabbed a song off of that. It's a song called Pruitt Igo. I don't know. I can't pronounce that. It's also used in Watchmen during the Dr. Manhattan reminisces while he's on Mars.
I love that movie.
Scene. So here you go, guys. Enjoy this song. I'm only doing one song because it's kind of a long one. We'll be back with the second half of the show. We got a lot to talk about. This is episode 2. It's our 1-year show. Woo! 1-year anniversary. Woo!
Happy anniversary, baby.
Are you going to jump out of a cake?
Oh, man.
We have Tom, I didn't tell you. We have a cake, and you're going to jump out of it, buddy.
Whoa, that's a big-ass cake.
You don't know how many eggs we have to use. Man, that was a lot of eggs. All right, so we'll be back. Guys, enjoy this little ditty, and here we go.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Crespo Dome.
Welcome to the
Would you like to try that again, sir?
Welcome to the second half of episode 52 of Cinema Crespediso. It is me, Christopher Crespo, hanging out with Drewster Gogman. Drew!
What up?
And Tom the beer guy, Tom!
Man, I get so thirsty.
Yes, we are quite thirsty. Put on your sunglasses. You're feeling extra Wolfman Jackish right now. Jackish, that didn't sound...
That sounded really bad.
This episode is sponsored by Orange Blossom Pilsner. Drew's drinking Toasted Coconut Porter. Tom and I are drinking some OBPs. I would have grabbed a TCP, Tom, but I got a six-pack of action the other day that I've been drinking. I already have some in the fridge. So I'm going with the OBPs.
Yum.
Can't wait to get some of those heirloom beers and the IRA.
IRA. I asked my Irish friend if I would get any trouble for making a beer called IRA.
I actually just thought about that as I said it out loud. I was like, is it going to come with car bombing? That's not going to be good, you know?
Yeah, Jimmy Mulvaney, the owner of Clatter Cottage, I was in there the other day, and I said, so hey, Jim, and I can barely understand this cat, his Irish thick accent so thick, I said, so am I going to get any heat about making an IRA? He looked at me and he goes,
excuse me?
What do you mean? I go, India Red Ale. And he goes, oh, he thought it was funny as hell. Yeah, no, yeah. No, 20 years ago, maybe.
Okay, all right, so they got over it.
Yeah,
they're all
that's,
good.
That's history.
That's funny. All right, well, let's get some plugs out of the way. Drew, where can people find you online?
Antario419 on Instagram and Twitter.
On Twitter, tweet them up. Get me on Twitter at I am Chris Crespo. Are you on Twitter, Tom? You're not on Twitter, are you?
You know, we OBP has a Twitter account, and I've got a friend that kind of helps me out with it, but we don't do much
with
it.
You don't do much with it? Yeah, are you more of a Facebook?
Yeah, we're pretty good on Facebook. I and a friend, we kind of co-work the Facebook side. And
so where should people go for that?
OBP Beer, facebook.com/OBP Beer, or you can just search OBP or Orange Blossom Pilsner, and it will bring you right up. Also, there is the Tom the Beer Guy portion of OBP, where I just kind of put my beer exploits and links to neat beer stuff that I find on the internet. And
nice.
It's a cool little thing. If you're interested in beer at all, definitely check it out.
Yeah, people, I definitely recommend checking out. You always put up a bunch of interesting articles, beer-related and even not beer-related. I read the article recently you put up about how cutting the hair and the beard is like an extension of your nerves. And
That was actually on my personal Facebook.
That was on my personal page. That was some interesting stuff, man.
Yeah, that's why they found out. Yeah, it was a great article. It's about how they learned that, you know, these Indians were such great, you know, great hunters and
they're
great
scouts,
stalkers
and
trackers and such, and they in Vietnam, they wanted those kind of guys in Vietnam, so they went and enlisted some of these guys who were just so good at it, and they put them through boot camp, shaved all their hair off, and all of a sudden the dudes were retarded. And
they
gave
them
the
military
hell?
Cut, and they cut their beards and everything, and they couldn't do nothing.
And they did some pretty real research that showed that the long hair really contributed to their sensory intake. Yeah.
That it's an extension of your body, and it acts as an antenna to the natural world around you. They were able to attune to that.
And my hair is still pretty long after all these years, so I guess I had to kind of validate that a little bit.
Well, yeah,
it's a great article.
I haven't cut my hair since.
Are you going to go long, Chris?
How you feeling?
I'm feeling better. Drew keeps trying to sneak up on me. I'm getting better at it. You know, not one of these days, man.
I'm not going to be able to punch you in the kidneys anymore.
Not when my hair is long enough. It's like Samson, you know?
I think there's something to it.
There might be. There might be. Alright, so real quick before we get into the movie stuff, I did want to ask you, what is the future, Tom, of OBP?
Whoa, I got all kind of stuff. I alluded to a bit of it earlier in the show. I've got that IPA that I'm dropping back in the day, old school kind of hops. I've got these fun little beers I'm going to start popping out of the Spring Hill Brewery. It's a small brewery, only in a half barrel system, so it's not like I'm going to be able to fill the world with a beer.
And
but it's
so,
just
like you
fun.
Said, for a while, it's these new beers are going to be available at tap rooms around
just,
the state.
Yeah, it's specialty shops around. I'm just going to do little slim kegs of it, knock it out, and you know, it's going to be for real enthusiasts. Now, I do get some heat. OBP is a pretty gentle beer. It's an easy drinking beer. It's made with honey, and you know, it's I actually released OBP. quite a few years ago here in Florida, because Florida was such a timid craft market. People just weren't embracing the craft beers like the rest of the country was.
Right.
So I realized my Gentle Little Honey beer was a great way to get people off the BCM.
It's a good gateway to go from your
Bud Miller Coors.
Yes, the Super Bowl beers.
Anybody can jump from Bud Miller Coors straight into an OBP and not be offended. You can't do that with an IPA or a pale ale.
No, too much flavor.
So kind of a training wheel beer, if you will.
Right.
So that's why I released OBP. I love it. I'm not down in the beer, but it's not, you know, a real serious beer enthusiast beer. They want more flavor.
Okay.
And I do get a little heat about that from the beer enthusiasts, but quite frankly, you know, there's a whole lot more BMC drinkers than there are craft beer. So that was who I was just trying to bring people into the craft segment with OBP.
But even when it comes to craft beer, I mean, not every single craft beer has to be a super flavorful, like you're eating something, you know.
Right.
There still has to be drinkable, quaffable, you know, craft beers. I want a beer that I can put down
and
that I know is made with some care.
And that, you know, I can drink a few of as opposed to, you know, like just a glass every once in a while because it's just too much sometimes.
Well, I think every brewery has a commitment to have a wide range of beers. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, for the longest time just had my three, the OBP squared, which is 11%, big, you know,
well, I mean, that,
make the music sound better
that,
beer.
That's almost the opposite of the OBP in terms of like the flavor profiles amped up. And I mean, I got a four pack of that the other week, and you know, I had two of them in one night, and I was, you know, all right, I'm done.
Oh man,
you know, I gotta switch to water now.
It'll make the music sound better. That's for sure.
It'll make everything better. make sleep better.
Then I've got the coconut porter, which is a dark beer. So that's kind of my little range that I have out in the market.
Uh-huh.
But I've got so many other beers
that
I want
to
make.
You're ready to blow up.
So I'm making these little beers over in this brewery in Spring Hill, a little 8.5 barrel. Can't make a ton of beer, but I can make some fun beer.
Right.
And I've also moving my contract. I contract brew OBP, TCP, and OBP squared.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a little heat because I contract brew that out of state in South Carolina. They do a great job for me. They're wonderful folks. Been there for 4 or 5 years. And the beer is great. They make it to my intent. I taught them how to make it and how I want it made. And they follow my guidelines and do a great job with it. But it is Florida's honey beer.
Yeah.
And Florida's honey beer is currently made in South Carolina. You got to bet that's a little awkward.
Well, so, it's like an American flag made in China.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a new brewery opening up in Lakeland. You can actually see it off I-4. It's a big bottle. You can see a long neck bottle built into the concrete. It's about 30 feet high. It's really cool.
Oh, really?
But the name of the place is Brew Hub, and they're opening to contract brew beers.
Oh, okay.
And we negotiated with them a little while. Finally signed a contract last month, and we will be moving production OBP into Lakeland for this new brewery.
Nice. That's awesome.
I'm really excited about that for a couple of reasons. One, it'll be made in Florida. It's going to save some money on shipping.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's some, you know, many, many reasons why this is a good move
you
for
think
us.
That might, like, I'm just saying, you think that might shave a couple of cents on the beers?
Maybe? Oh, absolutely. I got a little better price from my margin. I don't make much money at contract brewing.
No, I imagine.
Beer.
No,
the margin's really slim for me.
And for what I see other six packs for, it's still on the low end of six packs for craft beers.
So,
I mean, generally, I see them for $9.99. Generally, at some places, I see them for maybe $10 and change.
Right. Know? And but I'm going to end up making another buck a case on it, which
good.
Is going to change, you know, the ability of my company.
Yeah.
You know, I'll be able to do a lot more stuff
with
a little bit more revenue. And another neat thing is it's there's probably $1 a case attached to the shipping from South Carolina to Florida. So we're going to save some money in shipping.
Nice.
And another awesome thing, here's two more things that are great about this move. One, there's a PhD that is the head brewer there. This dude actually has a doctorate in brewing.
At the Brew Hub?
At the Brew Hub in Lakeland, and he's very respected, just an incredible brewer. Mm-hmm. And I, as much of an artist as I am, I know you can't ignore the science. I know how important the science is.
Right.
So it's so neat to have a brewery like that at my disposal to where I can be an artist and I can hand my art to this scientist.
And he can help make it work to help you get your vision.
He can refine my art
into
a technical expertise.
That's super exciting to be able to have that kind of that resource there at your fingertips.
Oh, nothing against you guys in South Carolina. Sorry if you're listening, Tom, up there. But I expect my beer to improve under these conditions.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not, honestly?
And I'm going to move into cans. We're not going to do bottles any longer.
Oh, nice.
You know, I love me a can
I like
beer.
Cans. I'm a big fan of cans.
And, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about cans and craft segment because, you know, cans really signify cheap beer. That's what, that's what people have been ingrained to think. And it's so hard for people to say. I remember when I had my beer distributorship, the first brewery to embrace cans, the first craft brewery to embrace cans was Dale's Pale Ale, Oscar Blues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a big joke, and they said, ha-ha, let's can our beer. And they found this little can in line. They go, oh, we made cans. And all of a sudden, it started making sense because, you know, there's a lot of reasons why a can is a better package
than a bottle. The light pollution alone, you know, you're sealing it in there. You're not going to get any light in there to ruin it.
And it cools flavor. So much quicker.
Yes, they do.
And it's more green, environmentally friendly because of the aluminum. If you recycle aluminum and you recycle glass, you recycle both of them, they are just, aluminum is so much more better for the environment.
You get more out of the aluminum.
But if you don't recycle either, they're about they're about the same amount of green. Not very much. But as soon as you recycle both of them, then aluminum just wins head and shoulders.
So many reasons to go cans over.
And then
there's that whole myth about how the cans add the metallic. Flavor. Yeah, but that's a myth.
You know? Now, I don't know if you were around, but when we did the Beer of the Week on the SBK show last year, I wanted to dispel that. So I found 4 different beers that were available in can and bottle.
And he did a Pepsi challenge with them?
We did them on the blind where you had a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. Uh-huh. You had 2 Sierra Nevada Pale Ales. One came from the can, one came from the bottle. You got 2 Stella Artois. One came from the can, one came from the bottle.
Which one was which?
And, I'm going, all right, guys, which one's the one in the can? Which one tastes like metal? Come on, which one tastes like metal?
Yeah.
And there was no metal.
Yeah,
and people couldn't tell the difference. The ones that quite often were better were the can. And I will go, all right, you don't taste any metal, how about a difference? Is there a difference in the 2 beers? And they go, yeah, I kind of like this one better. And
the one that was protected inside the can?
Yeah, the one that was in the can. And
funny how that happens.
And another plus in the can that you can't ignore is a case of bottles. It's 4 6 packs of bottles full of beer in their carton and everything weighs 32 pounds.
Okay.
A case of cans, same amount of liquid.
Yep.
26 pounds.
Wow, is that much difference?
6 pounds lighter.
Yeah.
For a case of cans than a case of bottles.
I'll tell you, Drewster knows. For the reg, for drinking on the reg, I'm going to go with the England. Same price.
Yeah.
12 beer.
12 pack of bottles, 12 pack of cans. Same price. What do I bring
cans
home?
Cans every time.
Cans every time. All the reasons to talk about. First off, those are green bottles. What are they thinking with the green bottles? Even inside the box, I don't want any light pollution in there. The cans, no light pollution. They taste better. They get colder, just like you said. I didn't even think about how it's lighter, but it is. They are easier to carry around.
Yeah, fill up your cooler. Fill up your cooler with 18 bottles and 18 cans, and
Agreed.
Throw that in your canoe. what you want to take?
Yeah, right. What do you want to paddle down the river?
Yeah, throw a 12 pack in your backpack, and you're going to walk down. You know, go hiking. What you want to carry? 12 pack of bottles or 12 pack of cans?
Cans. I'll tell you that from experience.
I'm excited for OBP in the can. That's going to be great.
So am I.
That's going to be great. So what's that going to be? Spring, summer, winter?
I think beginning of summer next year is probably when we're going to see it.
Next year, 2015?
No, 14.
Oh, okay.
Probably summer. 6 months from now. Six or 8 months from now.
Because now I'll be able to drink OBP on the beach.
In the pool, golf,
on my
sporting events,
on my couch.
Cans are absolutely the way to go.
Cans are everywhere.
Now, I do have a parallel I want to get in. A lot of people, wine.
Yeah, wine.
Uh-huh. A cork is so romantic. You know, it's great to spin the corkscrew in and pop, pull the cork out.
Right.
And, there's a ceremony to that.
Right.
And you can't ignore that.
And, screw top wine has been considered cheap wine for years.
Yeah,
or
and any wine that has a screw cap on it is, designated. People think, oh, that's just cheap wine. Much like a beer in a can is just cheap beer.
Right.
Well, it has become common knowledge in the wine industry that a screw-on cap is a far better closure than a cork. You get far less failures. Mm. It lasts longer. And it is a better way to seal the bottle by far than a cork.
And by screwing it, you're also not going to get the whole, oh, you corked the wine thing going on, you know, which is absurd.
Exactly.
What you're
doing with that. So, the movement of cans into quality beer is very similar to the movement of screw-on caps
makes
into
sense.
Quality wine.
That makes sense.
Because there are the traditionalists that are going to shun the screw-on cap in a fine wine. Mm, yeah. But then there's the progressive wine lover that's going to forget that, you know...
Why.
It's not romantic, but it sure makes my wine, you know, I've got a better chance of this being a good bottle of wine.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. That is actually a really good parallel. That makes perfect sense. Man, that's exciting. It's like big plans for OBP in 2014.
I'm not done.
Oh, what else? What else we got? What else we got?
I don't know how I'm going to get all this stuff done. It's crazy. I have purchased a 3.5 barrel, really tiny little brew house, and secured the funding for a little tasting room in Orlando.
Get out of here!
Nice.
We're looking at a space at Virginia and Mills, right by the New Fresh Market.
Okay.
And actually have all our paperwork into the city. They're meeting February 24th, I believe. The city is going to get together and see if they will approve my plan to put a brewery in this little location.
And then you can have a place where you can make some beers right there, and people can come in, and I'll have like a bar stuff, like a tap room.
Absolutely. It's going to be an on-premise retail establishment where we will make, and it's 3.5 barrels, which to you guys is like 7 kegs of beer.
Okay.
So we're making like 7 kegs of beer at a batch. And we'll have 6 or 10 different beers that we rotate through, and we'll just make the beer right there, and you'll be able to walk in and have a pint or get a growler to go.
That's ridiculous.
Sounds amazing.
That is awesome.
my new favorite place.
And that's, you know, again, we're back to me being an artisan, and that's where I'm going to really be able to play with some beers. I've got some recipes. I used to make the craziest beers. I made shiitake brown ale before.
Really?
Oh, it was such a wonderful beer.
Yeah.
And I really love making just oddball, goofy beers.
Like, did it taste mushroomy, or did it just have an earth?
A little bit of earthy character. I love shiitake mushrooms already.
Well,
I think they really contribute to any meal, just about.
Yeah.
And so I found shiitake powder and made a shiitake brown ale. It was really kind of nice.
Oh, man.
So
awesome.
I've got a lot of goofy beers I'm going to make.
Those are the type of things we can expect at the tasting room.
Man.
Do you have a name for it yet? Or do you know what you're going to call it?
We're going to call it Unique Brewing Company.
Okay.
Which will help to, you know, identify the fact
What's
that we're
going
to be making some funny, fun, crazy beers.
You better be expecting some shiitake-based beers and whatnot if you're walking in there.
Man,
don't walk in asking for a Miller Lite.
Once I became an accomplished home brewer, I had converted my two-car garage into a home brewery. And once I got pretty good at brewing and really knew the process, I became just really creative. I would pile through ethnic markets and you know, produce stands, just looking. Everything was a potential ingredient for beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was a lot of fun. Kind of look at it like when you learn how to play guitar, you learn how to play other people's music.
Right.
You don't just You don't learn how to play guitar by writing your own music and playing your music.
You
learn the mechanics of guitar by playing other people's music. And once you get that mechanics down, then you're able to go on and make your own music.
Or it's like with movies. You don't just sit down and write a script without having ever seen a movie or heard a story. You have to get all the input first.
You got to learn the dynamic and then put your spin on that dynamic.
Figure out what you like about it, what you want to say through all that. It's all about self-expression. Whether you're expressing yourself through movies or music or beer, it's still, like you said, it is an art.
So when I was a crazy passionate home brewer and my garage was full of brewing equipment, I went through there's like 70 bona fide beer styles, some with some subcategories within them. And I went through that whole list, maybe minus a couple that just I had no interest in. But I, one by one, went through each one of those styles and learned how to make it. It'd be similar to learn how to play country music.
Makes sense.
I'm going to learn how to play jazz music. Now I'm going to learn how to play this music. And after I learned how to play all those songs, then... I felt like I really had accomplished that, and you could write
your own thing.
Then I could really write my own song. And one thing that I really got good at was recipe formulation. And I can pretty well design a beer in my head with a recipe in my head and brew it and be really close to what I was trying to make.
Wow, interesting. So
a lot of fun.
So that's what we can expect at the unique
Brewing Company.
Unique Brewing Company, the tap. Man, when is that coming? Is that another summer-ish?
Let's see. If the city says yes on February 24th, we're guns a-blazing.
Say yes, city!
It's probably 3 months behind that is when we'll see.
Oh, man. I'm going to be there every week.
Tom. Perfect ending.
All right, Tom. Well, that's time for... That means Juice Chicago versus the world. Juice Chicago versus the world. Juice Chicago
you versus me, buddy.
He put his fists up.
If you remember, you guys in episode 20 went head-to-head in a movie-related game. You remember that at all, Tom?
I do.
You guys...
I did pretty good for being... Yeah. Not that big a movie guy.
You guys actually tied.
Wow. My only tie.
And I had no tiebreaker that week. So it's the only tie on record.
Drew, my only tie I will ever have.
Drew currently sits at a record of 11-10-1.
So you're coming into this kind of pissed off right to start, huh?
Not really pissed off. It's just it's weird. It's weird to have a tie under my belt.
Yeah, because it's going to be the only one.
It's going to be the only one ever.
The only one ever, because I won't let that happen again. But that is the way it is. So here we go, guys. Round two, Tom, you are the world versus Drewster Cogburn. This week's game, I'm kind of excited about this one. I think it's a good one. I'm kind of proud of myself. This is episode 52. I want to come up with a good game, right?
Yeah.
This game is called Who Said It? We did a version of this before. I'm going to give you a quote. You tell me who said it. Your options are Arnold, Sly, or Mo. That's Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, or Mahatma Gandhi. All right, so I'll give you a quote. You tell me who said it. Schwarzenegger, Stallone, or Gandhi. Okay. Drew, the last time you played with Kevin was a bit of a kerfuffle, but we'll just say you won. I apologize for that. That was a technical error. But we'll just say you won. Drew, you got to go first. Do you want A or B?
I'll go with A.
You get A. All right, so I'm going to give you these five quotes. You tell me who said it. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, or Mahatma Gandhi. Are you ready?
Yes.
Number one. Strength does not come from winning. Your struggles develop your strengths. When you go through hardships and decide not to surrender, that is strength.
Gandhi.
That was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Didn't know Schwarzenegger could be so deep.
Number two. Just like good manners, peace has to be learned.
To repeat myself, I'm going to say Gandhi again. And I'm going to be wrong again.
That is incorrect. That was Sylvester Stallone. That was wrong. Here we go. Number three. First, they ignore you. Then they laugh at you.
That's Gandhi.
Then they fight you. Then you win.
That's Gandhi.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
Well, that's correct. That is Gandhi. Good job.
That quote I recognized.
Number four. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong.
Sly.
That was Gandhi.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Gandhi. And number five. The worst thing I can be is the same as everyone else.
Arnold.
That was Arnold.
Oh.
So you got 2 out of 5.
That's rough, man.
You got 2 out of 5. All right, rough. Tom. So here you go. You got to get 3 to beat Drew. 3 out of 5.
It's pretty much a crapshoot.
Number one. Are you ready?
Yes.
Who said it? Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, or Mahatma Gandhi? The women who break down barriers are those who ignore limits.
Sly.
Schwarzenegger.
No. Damn it.
Number two. Sly's quotes about women are...
A little derogatory.
Number two. There is a natural law of karma that vindictive people who go out of their way to hurt others will end up broke and alone.
Sly.
That is Sly, correct. Good job. Number three. You are what you leave behind.
Arnold.
Ooh, that was Sly. That was Sly. Here we go, number four. Satisfaction lies in the effort, not in the attainment. Full effort is full victory.
That's Gandhi.
That is Gandhi. Yes, here we go. Number five, you get this one right, you win. The world will never come together and say we are one.
Arnold.
Oh, slide. Oh, Sylvester Stallone, you guys are tied. But I have a tiebreaker.
This time around.
So here we go. Drew, there's a couple of pens over there. Can you grab those pens real quick? Because this one, I want you guys to just go ahead and write it down. Oh, shit. Here you go, Tom. Here we go. So this one we're going to do closest to the pin. Gandhi, in 1982, was nominated for 11 Academy Awards. How many did it win? If you guys put on the same answer, we're going to be screwed. I have to come up with a double tiebreaker.
My pen doesn't work.
Oh my god. Here you
Neither
go.
Is mine.
Good thing we kept those right there.
I just made it work.
Okay.
Because I held it down.
All right. I'll take yours, Tom. There you go.
Pen's messed up.
Yeah, yeah. Here. Okay, here we go. Perfect. Here we go. Wonderful. Here we go. So, in 1982, Gandhi was nominated for 11 Academy Awards. How many did it win? Drusa Cogburn said it won 6 awards. Tom said it won 8. The correct answer is 8.
Yo!
Oh,
Tom,
on the dot.
Nailed it. Good job, Tom. Tom wins this round of Drusa Cogburn versus the World. Drew, I'm sorry.
Hey, dude, that puts me at 50%, actually.
11-11-1?
No, yeah, 11-11-1.
You mad, bro?
No, it's okay. It's a lot of ones. I was kind of hoping I'd go out with at least a winning record or a losing record, but this is literally a nothing record. This doesn't mean I'm equal. I'm completely at 50%.
Have a way to start 2014 and a way to start the new year of Cinema Crespediso. Because that's after a full year of Cinema Crespediso, you are 50. You're at 500.
Yes.
Man, remember when you won like the first two, you were 2-0, and you're like, oh man, we should have t-shirts that said, if people win, to get a t-shirt that says, I beat Drew.
And then right after that, I started losing.
And then he lost, started losing.
That's what happens to me. I get cocky and I fall.
Yeah, exactly.
I try not to brag because as soon as I do, I'm done.
It's over. Yeah, it's over.
Oh man. All right. Well, Tom, all the news about the plans for OBP are super exciting. I can't wait. For it. I can't wait to buy some beers and cans. Can't wait to go to the tap room and get delicious, crazy growlers to bring home. I can't wait for it all.
Dude, we're going to have to record.
Exciting that it's going to be recorded.
We should record an episode from the tap room.
We're going to record an episode from the tap room when it opens. Tom, we're going to be there, buddy.
I don't know if you'll be able to afford it, but yes, I think that'd be cool. I'm kidding.
This guy.
We'll be huge by then. It's only a couple months away.
Well, then
huge.
I don't know if I'll be able to afford it.
We'll be huge by then.
Well, let's get into some movie news here. Let's talk about some movies. Let's get the show started. How does that sound? You guys want to start the show?
What have we been doing?
I was about to say, are you pulling an SBK on us?
I was just drinking beers and hanging out. I don't know about you guys. Should I hit record? Let me hit record.
Is this thing on?
Well, let me hit record. Oh, that's so good. Here we go. Variety reporting. Wolf of Wall Street breaks the F word record.
No, I'm sure it does.
The fucking Wolf of Wall Street has most fucking uses of the fucking F-bomb than any other fucking U.S. movie in fucking history.
That's awesome.
You guys want to guess how many F-bombs were dropped in Wolf of Wall Street?
A couple hundred.
I won't accept a couple hundred. I need a number.
824.
824. Oh my god. Tom?
371.
506. 506. The previous record holder for number of fucks in a movie was the Spike Lee movie Summer of Sam, where it was all about, you know, the hot summer in Brooklyn in the 70s, whatever. That one had like 400 something fucks. The thing is, that one's a shorter movie. Wolf of Wall Street's 3 hours, so it has slightly more fucks per minute. That ratio is pretty important.
FPM?
Yeah, the FPM. FPM is important. But Wolf of Wall Street still has an FPM of like 2.8. So for every minute you watch Wolf of Wall Street, you're going to hear 2.8 fucks. Or variations of said word.
No.
It's a wild movie, man. It's a wild, crazy movie. Now, there is a documentary called Fuck. And it's a documentary about the word. And that has about something like 800 uses of the word. But that's a documentary. That's like cheating. You know, it doesn't count.
Yeah, if you name your movie.
Right. That word is what the movie's about. I mean, come on, it doesn't count. And then apparently there's also some Canadian horror film that uses it like 600 times, but the movie sucks, so no one cares about it.
So, it's an Italian.
Huh?
They're not saying the word fuck, they're just saying fucking Italian.
No, Canadian.
Oh, Canadian.
Not Canadian, I'm sorry. Canadian. Not. So they say fook over there. That's what they're saying.
A.
Fook, A. So Wolf of Wall Street, they say fuck a lot. So if, you know how it is in Middle America, they hate that stuff.
Yep.
In Middle America, if a kid under the age of like 14 hears the word fuck, their head immediately explodes.
And the devil wins.
And thousands of spiders pour out of their neck hole, and then it infests the people around them, and they turn to zombies, and the entire town burns to the ground.
Like I said, what movie was that? And the devil wins.
This is in Middle America.
No, this is what happens when people say fuck.
When kids hear the word fuck. Right?
Yeah.
That's why we're trying to protect the children from these words, these horrible, horrible words.
Yes, correct.
Fuck.
You just
fuck is right.
You guys just killed like two more towns in America. The Middle America. I don't know. I'm just saying, these guys
let them burn.
Needs to relax a little. They're just words, right? But I don't want my kids saying them. That's a little disingenuous.
You got kids?
Hope not. Do you?
Yeah.
Drew, do you?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that he's aware. Kids. Speaking of kids, remember when Paul Walker died?
Yeah.
That was pretty recent.
Yeah, it happened.
They had to figure out what to do with his scenes in Fast and Furious. Have you watched any of those Fast and Furious movies, Tom?
I think I saw one years ago.
One of them? Yeah, I mean, they made like six of them by now. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a pretty big part of these movies.
I can see why, like, 12-year-olds take the shit out of it. But
people flipped out for, I mean, well, you know, the last couple ones, action-wise, they're really fun action movies. And a good action movie, they haven't been making good action movies lately in America for the last decade. They've all been too dour or just filmed poorly, you know. But the Fast and Furious ones are fun. So that's why they're getting popular. Paul Walker was a pretty big part of these movies. And he filmed about 50% of his role in Fast and Furious 7 before he died. They also announced that, you know, he died in this car accident. It was in a Porsche. He was a passenger in a Porsche that his buddy was driving. Some super-powered Porsche. Not just any Porsche, too. A crazy Porsche. The results came back. No drugs or alcohol in either person's system. No mechanical failure whatsoever. So it was human error. And they estimated that the Porsche was going at least 100 miles per hour. So that's a lot of MPHs to go to those FPMs. Yeah. So there you go. That's why he died. Someone was driving too fast.
Well, here's a parallel. What was remember that Bruce Lee's kid died halfway through the shooting of The Crow?
Like 70% of the way through shooting The Crow, they were doing a scene where they were going to shoot the character, and they were filming, you know, someone pointed a gun at him and shot him. But because of this crazy series of events,
it was a real load in there.
Yeah, there was a bullet lodged in the barrel, and they had a primer, like a blank. They put a blank in the gun, but there was a bullet in the barrel, and they didn't check the barrel. And then when they shot the blank, it shot the bullet out into his abdomen.
Yeah, I used to do props, and props the prop guy is the one that manages, anything that the talent touches is a prop.
Right.
And there's specialized prop people that do guns.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things about a revolver is if you have blanks in the gun, you're looking towards the gun, you can see that there's no lead in there.
Right.
So a prop man has to be really careful to make sure that he's good. And I think the general, what they do is they drop all the gunpowder. They pull the bullet apart, drop all the gunpowder out,
mm-hmm.
and then put the lead back in there and load that in the chamber that the camera can see.
So it looks like a bullet.
So it actually doesn't look like, you know, it's got the bullet.
But you also have to.
But it won't kill you.
But they also set off the primer too. That was part of the thing. I saw this crazy documentary on HBO in the 90s about how the whole series of events came together, and it involved them. Because there's scenes in a pawn shop, so they went to a real pawn shop and they just bought everything. And they took that to the set and they threw everything in the set, including what they bought were actual a box of bullets. And they put the bullets on in the display case, and someone went around, PA or whatever, went around, he saw the bullets. It was like, whoa, violation. We can't have actual live ammo on set. This is stupid. So he took it and he put it in the trunk of his car. Forgot about it for weeks. Then they had to shoot some scenes with guns, and they were running out of money. And this guy was like, "Well, I have these bullets in my trunk, and I know how to rig them to make I can make some into dummy bullets where I, like you said, take out the bullet, remove all the gunpowder, and he set off the primer, put the bullet back in, and then it looks like a normal unshot bullet that he can put in a gun and use it as a prop." So he had some of those set aside, and then he took other ones where he took the bullets out and he added in extra gunpowder, and those were his blanks, right? So first he took a gun and he put in a bunch of the dummies, the ones that had the gunpowder removed, and they did a scene where they shot the gun a few times, click, 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 and one of the primers, he had to set off all the primers ahead of time with a hammer and a nail, but one of them he didn't set off. So,
and it was the primer alone that shoved that lead.
It was the primer alone. It had just enough force to shove the lead bullet into the barrel of the gun. So then they were like, they even said that they heard a pop, pop. What's that sound? I don't know. And no one checked the gun. So they take out those bullets. They put in the blanks with the primers and the gunpowder, with the lead still in the gun barrel. No one checks the gun barrel. They bring out Brandon Lee to shoot his scene. They point the gun at him. They pull the trigger.
And he shot.
And the blank shoves the lead in the bullet.
And it's into Brandon Lee's abdomen. He dies that night at the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I've got something to say about that. That was a low-budget picture.
Yes.
And I used to do movies. I don't know if you guys recall, but
yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
But I used to
did some work on Lethal Weapon 3 shot here in Orlando.
Yeah, yeah. I've done a lot of pictures, yeah. And I mostly did theater and corporate work, but mm-hmm. I did some TV and film.
Yeah.
But I was IATSE, the International Alliance of Theatrical and Stage Employees. It's actually a union. That
okay.
And we were high budget.
Okay.
That's why I did Lethal Weapon 3. That's why I did some high-end pictures. I never did low-budget stuff because
makes
we
sense.
Were professionals
and we
demanded a professional wage.
You crossed the I's,
dotted
the T's.
And we didn't kill anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of these pictures that are coming out that are low-budget,
yep.
And there's so many kids out there that just want to work, and they'll work for a T-shirt. Oh, I want to work. I want to work on a movie. I'll work for 30 bucks a day. I'll work for 30 yeah. bucks a day.
Just for the experience.
So you get these derelicts that just want to, you know, be in the same room as Brandon Lee, and they don't care about a paycheck,
right.
But you know, and what do you get from that? Now, if it would have been a IA union picture with seasoned staff, that would have never happened.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly right. That's how it was presented in the documentary, where it was a series of cost-cutting measures and inexperience and just not doing everything you're supposed to do, not being careful at every step of the way. A series of bad mistakes led to that crazy confluence of events, and it's insane that that happened, you know. And it's terrible, but it happens. And but with that movie, Brandon Lee, he was the lead, right? And he was like 70-80% done with his with his scenes. So they did a couple of body doubles. They did one instance of digitally putting his face on a stunt double. And at that time, that was like kind of groundbreaking shit because I was, you know, 94 or whatever. The only other person doing that was James Cameron with Terminator, right? So they were able to get around that very unfortunate incident. With this one, with Fast and Furious, Paul Walker, they didn't know what they were going to do because they only had so much of his stuff shot. He's such an integral part of the movie, but there's a whole team. It's him and like six other people too, you know? So what could they do? And they finally seems to have decided, the Hollywood Reporter anyway is reporting, because that's what the Hollywood Reporter does.
Yeah, they report on Hollywood.
They're reporting that what they're going to do with this character, plus it's a movie about cars and car crashes, are they going to kill off the character? That'd be in poor taste. Cause dude died
yeah,
in a
you
got to
tread carefully on this
tread,
one.
Tread lightly, exactly. They decided that they're going to, quote, retire his character. So even though they have 50% of it shot, they're going to find a way to make it so that...
They're going to ride around it.
They're going to ride around it. And
wow.
And his character is just going to go off into sunset alive, just assumed alive, never to be seen or heard from again.
That's going to be fun in post-production to pull that off.
Yeah, well, they're still in production. They still have...
Oh, I thought they were done. I thought it was in the can.
No, that's part of the problem. They still have like 50% of the movie left to shoot, including a lot of the action scenes.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're going to use a lot of what they have, but they're going to have to work around it. They're probably going to have to add another actor to kind of fill in the space there, you know, to even get more people interested. But that's what they decided they're going to do, so that's how they're going to get around that one.
Yeah. Well, good for them.
It's not every day where a major actor dies during a huge production like that. The last time was when the guy playing Dumbledore died during the second or third Harry Potter movie. But they replaced him without a hitch.
Yep.
No one noticed.
He was probably a bit player.
No, it was Dumbledore. He was a pretty big character.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was like the Yoda of the Harry Potter universe or whatever.
Nobody seemed to care.
No, by people. I think they threw in some line about like, oh, I had a plastic surgery during the off-season of children. Like, okay, that's cool. That's cool, old man Yoda. This article I found fascinating. This is from the BBC News. BBC News Asia. 10 things about North Korea's film industry. North Korea has a film industry, guys.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, they got to brainwash their populace.
They do have to brainwash the populace, plus Kim Jong-un. Un's the current one?
Yes.
Oh. Who's the dad?
Il.
Kim Jong-il loved movies. He was crazy, crazy for movies. He was crazy for Hollywood movies. As much as they hated Western capitalism and civilization, all that, he loved, loved, loved movies. So he is part of the reason why it's even a film industry to begin with. His son's keeping that alive, obviously. 10 things you might not have known about the North Korean film industry. Number one, some of the top hits were made by a South Korean. Anyone interested in that at all?
Nah, not really.
No? The worst actors were American.
That sounds about right.
Back in the 60s, there were a bunch of American defectors who thought it might have been a good idea to go to North Korea.
Because, you know, communism was big.
Yeah, and then they were like, that was a bad idea. But they got roped into the film industry. What they would do is they would get locals, whoever, just farmers, whoever they could get, they would get them to be in the movie. And Americans were always cast as the bad guys because, you know,
Americans were always Americans.
And they were just local dudes. They weren't actors. So it even helped them to have, like, the worst actors being Americans, you know, for that image.
They probably made them snuff films.
Number three is the film will come to you, which basically means that it wasn't like they released the movies, they were playing at the cinema, and if you wanted to, you could go and check them out. It was more like, here's the schedule of movies coming out.
Go see them.
Make sure you see these movies, you know. And it was, time was made. It was like, you know, everyone go see the movies.
Yep.
Number four, movies have one message, promote the great leaders.
Well, of course, because, you know, they're gods or something over there.
But number five, do not show them. So you can't actually make movies about the leaders themselves. You have to show them indirectly. It's like in paintings, statues, stuff like that, on money, references to them. But you can't make movies about them. It's almost like Muhammad.
Like a law. Yeah.
Muhammad. Number six, the army also acts.
I'm sorry for those guys.
It pretty much just goes in line with their, you know, we're just using whoever we got to make these movies. It's not like they're going to hire a bunch of actors. They'll just use the army. Number seven, the films feature strong women and average men.
Weird.
They make a lot of movies in which the stronger characters in the film are women. And the men are all average and even pathetic.
That's kind of strange.
This is because Kim Jong-il and Un don't want to see no movies about men that are better than them. They want to see movies about men that are average because they are the great leaders. And the women are strong. However, the women at the end are still subservient to the men.
Of course.
So, that's interesting.
That's weird.
Well, this is, really? Number eight, Mr. Bean made it into North Korea.
Interesting.
Foreign films occasionally make it into North Korea. Foreign films are screened at the Pyongyang International Film Festival, which takes place once every 2 years. Past films include Mr. Bean and Elizabeth the Golden Age. Evita is thought to be the only U.S. film screened in North Korea. So they have a film festival, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, it's mostly going to be North Korean stuff. Number nine, bikes are banned, as in bicycles. You're a bike rider, right, Tom?
I used to be. Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore? Drew, you're getting into a little bit of bike riding, aren't you, buddy?
Only because I have to.
Apparently, the censors in North Korea don't like shots of people on bicycles or people with their shirt buttons undone. This person says that they think they wanted the city and the people to seem tidy and not sloppy. So I guess they thought if you ride on a bike, it makes it look poor.
All right.
Is that what the North Koreans are thinking?
Sure, but aren't most of them dirt poor?
And finally, number 10, frame the Kims properly. If you're going to have a shot of any member of the Kim family, like in a painting or whatever, in a statue, they can't be, the image can't be cut off at all. It has to be framed properly within your shot. So do not cut off, do not present a partial image of
only,
a member of the Kim family.
Only full images. That's weird again, too.
Only full images. So, some crazy stuff out there in the world. Got a couple of questions from the Twitter at Junk Culture Inc. Says, "Hey Tom, why are you so cool?"
I don't try to be cool, and I think that is the basis of being
cool. That's the way it works.
If the guy that's trying to be cool is so not cool,
he's failing.
Nope.
So I'm just being me and running with it, and luckily that transfers into cool.
Good answer. Oh, he has a follow up. Have you ever tried any Due South products?
Yeah, their beers are nice. They're well made, technically accurate. Love their pumpkin beer. They've got a really good fall seasonal with the pumpkin beer.
Pumpkin.
And
You're not sick of pumpkin beers, Tom? You know, I mean, it seems like with the last couple years, last few Halloweens, pumpkin, everything has gone crazy. Everyone has a pumpkin beer now.
Yeah, but you can still do a good one.
Well, yeah.
And
yeah, that's true.
And yeah, they do good work.
Okay. Due South. I don't think I've ever even heard of them.
Nope. They're down in South Florida.
Yeah,
I forget what city they're in, but they're doing.
Have you drew Due South?
Nope, have not heard of them.
Are they up here at all?
Spotty, but yeah, you can find them around here.
Because I think Junk Culture, where he's at, he's somewhere south of us. Melbourne, maybe something. Like that. Is Melbourne south of us?
Yes.
My Florida geography knowledge is horrible.
Crap.
It's horrible.
I went to Florida school, so yeah.
Did you? So that's even worse. At Matt Celery. Couple questions. Best movies about drinking. What guys think about movies about drinking? Can you think of any? Rack your brains for a minute about movies about drinking while I grab a beer. Do you need a beer, Tom?
Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Ah, yes, the Strange Brew. You ever see Strange Brew?
Yes.
Why don't you guys talk about Strange Brew for a quick minute?
Strange Brew.
That was a great movie.
Canadian. That's where I started to appreciate Canadians.
Oh, really?
And their love for beer.
Yeah. I mean, I never. That was the first time I saw Rick Moranis in like a real role, as opposed to just the guy from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Nice. Yeah, and I think that probably opened me up a little bit to the Trailer Park Boys when I discovered those guys.
Yeah, definitely. That Canadian humor.
That makes sense.
And if you guys have not checked out the Trailer Park Boys, you really should check out a couple episodes.
I've definitely seen the TV show. It's been a while since I watched it.
And it, you know, it works for me. I've seen everything they've done. I think it's the funniest shit I've ever seen.
Remember one guy with a mullet?
Some people don't dig it, but you may well dig it.
Remember there was a guy with a mullet selling hash in the high school?
Yeah,
that's about right.
That's about our
and selling hash out front of the Christmas. It was Christmas, and he's trying to sell hash to the people going in, and then he gets in an argument, and the preacher is giving a sermon, a Christmas sermon, and he shoves the preacher from behind the podium and really pours his heart out to the congregation, says, Christmas is about getting drunk and stoned with your friends and family. Let's all get drunk and stoned with our friends and family.
Hey, there you go.
True.
Then
that.
He's walking out. He was just overjoyed, just filled with the Christmas spirit, and he just starts throwing grams of hash to everybody in the church.
Wish I'd been there.
So yeah, that's YouTube, the Trailer Park Boys Christmas special.
Christmas special,
and I'm certain
there's some Trailer Park Boys stuff on the Netflix. I'm not sure if the Christmas special's on there, but on the Netflix Instant.
I think it's the TV stuff.
There's definitely a TV
stuff.
Yeah,
they've got their movies on it too. Yeah, I've been actually rewatching it here lately.
So there you go.
And it's still funny.
Strange Brew. I think Strange Brew has to
be like the question, sorry.
Yeah, that has to be the beer movie though. That is definitely it.
Beer Fest.
I think that's the one that good old Matt's Cabin Matt from SBK Live. I think that's the one where he loves. It's either Beer Fest or Beer.
It's those Broken Lizard guys.
Is it the Broken Lizard guys? No. Yeah, it's that one. He loves Beer Fest. I haven't seen it.
Beer Fest. Disgusting.
It's not that good.
It's just about debauchery and stupidness. I like to hold beer to a little higher level than just, you know, frat boy party to your puke.
Right on.
And that's not my bag. And I think they really defame and give beer a bad name.
I can definitely understand that. It's like making a movie, you know, like if you make a movie that's all about people smoking marijuana, but then
you make them all stupid.
It's like Reefer Madness, you know?
Yeah.
They made Reefer Madness to make people seem like if they were smoke marijuana, then they become crazy rapist assholes who want to kill people. And it's not necessary. But hey, Matt Kevin Matt thinks it's hysterical. but he's also a frat boy, so.
Exactly.
Now,
Michael
Jackson, not the singer, the world beer journalist, a British fellow.
Duh.
And he had a series called The Beer Hunter.
Okay.
And it was about him traveling around the world, exploring, going to different breweries and exploring different countries' cultures.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to say that is my favorite beer movie. And it's The Beer Hunter by Michael Jackson.
The Beer Hunter, which sounds like The Deer Hunter.
And I think there's about six in that series, six episodes in that
so
series.
So it's actually a mini series.
Right.
Oh, all right, cool.
They did one in Germany, one in Belgium, one in the States.
That sounds cool.
One in the UK.
There you go.
It's a really neat series.
So there you go, beer movies. Matt Silver has another question. He says, also, I've been buying a lot of kung fu movies lately. Blockbuster clearance sale. What are some of y'all's favorites? Into kung fu movies at all, Tom, at any point in your life?
I appreciate Bruce Lee, but yeah, I'm, you know, that's, again, I don't find horror or fighting to be...
Not
entertainment.
As opposed to the horror thing, I'm with you on the horror, not really my bag. Kung fu movies, Tom, that's my jam.
I can see more validity in a kung fu movie than I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's more about the action and the coolness of how it looks. And the old one's about the story, the honor.
Now, was Kill Bill a kung fu movie?
It is a mixture of, it's a kung fu movie, but it's also a samurai film, and it's also part Western.
I really enjoyed Kill Bill.
Yeah, Kill Bill's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was great.
I have on DVD the Japanese cut of Bill Kill, which is a little bit longer.
Bill Kill.
All the stuff that's added in is just more violence. And then the whole scene, the black and white scene in the House of Blue Leaves where she's fighting the crazy 88s, that's all in color.
It doesn't
cut to black and white, so you can see all the blood. It's wild, wild stuff, man. Kill Bill's great. I would say if you can find... It's tricky finding old stuff because old kung fu movies, some of them are just, you know, really cheap garbage movies, but some of them are great, like the original Drunken Master with Jackie Chan. It's an old kung fu movie from the 70s, but it's directed by the guy who would go on to do all the fight choreography for the Matrix movies and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Kill Bill... his name is Yuen Woo Ping. He directed Drunken Master way back in the day. They did a sequel of that in the 90s, The Legend of Drunken Master, which is awesome, awesome movie. I think you can't go wrong really with 70s Jackie Chan, any Bruce Lee, Fist of Fury, Chinese Connection, Enter the Dragon, Way of the Dragon, also known as Return of the Dragon. That's the one where he fights Chuck Norris at the Colosseum in Rome. Come on! How epic can you get?
Seriously.
Right? One of my favorites, starring Gordon Liu, who was in the 36 Chambers. The 36 Chamber. Shaolin. The movie has like five different titles. Shaolin Master Killer. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
It's the one where a lot of samples from the first Wu-Tang album comes from, Enter the 36 Chambers. That's a great movie with Gordon Liu. He's also in another movie called Eight Diagram Pole Fighter, which is a super awesome movie from the early 80s. That's a lot of fun. Kung Fu movies, man. I love them.
Did you ever see that little clip of Bruce Lee playing ping pong with nunchucks?
Yes.
Was that real?
It was proven false.
Yeah, it's got
to
be.
It was proven false. Yeah, it's gotta be. You can't play ping pong with nunchucks.
But if anyone did. And if anyone could,
it'd be Bruce Lee.
He would be like, it's Bruce Lee. Yeah. I mean, that guy was the best. His death was sad. Reaction to a medication. He had a brain aneurysm because he was suffering from migraines. And his doctor gave him some medication. He went not home, but to his girlfriend's house. Took the medication, went to bed, never woke up.
Wow.
Fell into a coma, died 2 or 3 days later.
Isn't that weird how great warriors fall like that?
Yep.
You'd think it'd take like an atom bomb to kill this dude, but no, he just kind of falls asleep and dies.
Didn't Alexander the Great go out some way like that? Like age of like 33?
Who?
Alexander the Great. Like, he conquered the whole world, and then he, like, died of syphilis or something.
No.
You know, something like that. I don't know. Not so great at the end there. I guess no one's great at the end. Kung Fu movies, buddy. There's a bunch of them. Just watch them. Enjoy them. I love them. Mr. Natathon wants to do a Crespo Dome battle. Let's do a quick one here. Who would win in a fight, and who's the better actor? Robin Williams versus Jim Carrey. So let's start with who's a better actor, Robin Williams or Jim Carrey?
Robin.
I don't know. They both have really good bad guys.
Both are good bad guys. Yeah. Both obviously known for doing comedy.
I think Robin's a better.
You think he's better? Yeah. Robin is good. Remember when he did 1 Hour Photo? Did you see that one?
Yeah.
That was kind of a creepy, darker one. Not really a horror film, but more of like a psychological thriller type thing where it helped him show his range. He did that back to back with Insomnia
with
Al Pacino.
Al Pacino, that was
man. The one I remember is What Dreams May Come. It was the one where the wife died in an accident. And she went to hell, and he actually went to hell to get her back.
Yeah,
I cried.
He like walks through heaven to get to hell or something. And Cuba Gooding Jr.
leaves heaven.
Like, yeah,
leaves heaven to go to hell to get his wife.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. is like trying to talk him out of it the whole time.
Yeah, that was an incredible movie.
He's good, but Jim Carrey.
And that is
too.
Why I say he's a better actor than Jim Carrey. Is that movie right there?
I mean, I would have to say I would point to Truman Show because Truman Show tapped into something that Jim Carrey has, where he does have this earnestness to him, where I guess it's the vulnerability that we see in him. We see the poor guy that grew up in Canada, the vulnerable guy that's always seeking attention because he is that type of dude. You know, that's part of what made him who he is. And they exploited that with that movie, and it worked. It's kind of like Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love. It uses some of the characteristics that make him who he is and uses them in the best way possible. Another movie that he's good in, but the movie itself isn't so hot, The Majestic, the one where he played a guy who like, had amnesia, and he goes to a town, and the town thinks he's some guy, and he goes along with him, but he's someone else the whole time. It's a Frank Darabont movie, and it's you know, I caught it once on HBO, it's all right, but he's great in it. Jim Carrey is. I mean, he can act. He can act his ass off if he wanted to. But then he does a lot of movies like Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to argue.
And The Riddler.
And The Riddler is like, You're going Robin Williams? What are you thinking? Jim, better actor. You haven't answered yet. Carrey or Williams?
I mean,
Mrs. Doubtfire versus The Mask.
I'm going to have to agree with Tom on this
You're
one.
Going with Robin Williams?
Robin Williams.
All right, yeah, I'm going to go with Robin Williams on that one. But who would win in a fight?
I think Harry ass Robin Williams.
You would think Harry ass Robin
and
Williams?
And I think Jim's a puss. You can look at, he looks like
dude,
a puss to me.
And he's very nonviolent and anti-gun and all that fun stuff. Like, I'm pretty sure Robin Williams could,
I think he's also like
could channel some of that Jumanji.
I think he's also like 15
stuff.
Years younger than him.
Yeah.
Robin Williams is kind of an older fella now.
Yeah, but sometimes the
Jim Carrey is still fit.
Yeah, but Robin Williams has those, has that fur that can, I mean, I'm sure that stuff can, you know, he could probably deflect bullets with that stuff.
With his body hair?
Yes.
You're making a body hair argument, Drew.
Yes. It makes him more manly, and therefore he would win.
I'm going with youth and physical appearance.
Age and treachery trumps youth and vigor every time.
Fair enough. So you're going Williams? Are you going Williams?
Yeah.
So you both went Williams both, and I'm going with a split. Rob Williams, Carey split. There you go. And I got a question from New York City correspondent Billy D.
And what does he have to say?
Let's see what old Billy D has to say. Happy New Year, my dudes. Great first year. I'm happy and proud of any contribution I made to the show. Looking forward to doing more. We appreciate it, Billy. Thank you very much. Tom, if you don't know, Billy D is our friend in New York City.
I recall him from
the episode 20?
Previous episodes.
He contributes almost every week, and he's our official third member of the show. He's just up in New York. And you don't hear his voice. Well, maybe we'll find a way where we get his voice on the show. But he's, or maybe we'll just get him down here and get him on the show as a guest.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
But he is our official New York City senior show correspondent and our horror film expert, because he's the guy that's super into horror films. So
loves
if you ever
horror.
Want to know anything about that whole genre, he's the guy. So here we go. My question, what is Cinema Crespo Diso's New Year's resolution? Thanks for the awesome year. Looking forward to this one, Billy D. New Year's resolution. It's a good question. Now he says Cinema Crespo Diso's New Year's. Does that mean the show's resolution?
Yes, the show's resolution.
Do you
resolution.
Have a New Year's resolution, Tom? Do you do that thing at all? Do you even think about it?
I don't put it as a resolution per se. I just try and, you know, just pull my britches up and tackle the year as best I can.
Okay.
You know, I know what I'm supposed to do. I know what's right and I know what's wrong, and I just try to do more right than wrong.
So you're more of a state of course kind of guy.
Well, I want to improve the course a bit if I can.
The
new year comes. You look back at maybe some of your failures and look forward, you know, and look back at some of your victories.
Uh-huh.
And you just try to massage more victories this year than you had the prior year.
All right, well, fair enough. How about you? Drew? I haven't asked you at all. Did you have any New Year's resolutions?
I don't do the New Year's resolution thing.
You don't do it at all?
No. If I resolve to do something, I mean, I can have a February resolution or a July resolution. If something needs to be fixed, if something needs to be improved, then just do it. Why wait till January 1st to be like, I'm going to do it now.
Yeah, I'm going to be an idiot the rest of the year. Yeah, yeah. And when January comes, I'm going to stop being an idiot.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, it's not the way it works.
Fair enough. I did come up with a sort of a resolution, which is just simply to see more movies. I just want to see more movies in 2014. That's all. But as a show, should we come up with a show resolution, Drew?
Yeah, we should resolve to get more listeners.
Blow this shit up.
We're going to resolve to blow this shit up, so we need everyone to help us blow this shit up. We need all you to resolve to do the same thing. That's to help build Cinema Crespedito to be something awesome.
Well, it's already something awesome. We seem to be
something awesome that everyone knows about.
Something more awesome and a larger expansion of...
Right. Yes. Something like that. Yeah. All right, so there you go. Thanks, Billy D. We really appreciate it. That brings us to the end of the show. Tom, I got a lightning round for you, dude.
Oh, my.
Are you ready? We got 10 questions to get inside the mind of Tom the Beer Guy. You ready?
All right, let me start that mind back up. I was winding down.
Get the mind revved it up. Spit out the answers as quick as you can. Drew, start the clock.
Go.
Number one, what is your favorite part of the day?
2 p.m.
Number two, would you rather be homeless for a year or be in jail for a year?
Homeless for a year.
Number three, what was your least favorite job ever?
Working for a brick mason, making mud, making the mortar for and delivering it to them. Yeah. Yes, that sucked really, really bad.
Hard work. Number four, which is colder, the North Pole or the South Pole?
Theoretically, they should be the same, but on the other hand, the North is known for being colder because we're on the Northern Hemisphere, so I'm going to just say the North.
All right, the answer is the South Pole. Number five, if you found $100, what would you do?
If I found $100?
Mm-hmm.
Go out to dinner.
All right, number six, baths or showers?
Shower.
Number seven, what percentage of the cucumber is water?
92.
96? Yeah, you're close, man. You're close. Number eight, do you prefer cats or dogs?
Cats.
Number nine, how many players are there on a soccer team?
Nine.
11. Then number 10, is the glass half empty or half full?
Oh, half full, baby.
There you go. Tom, that was a lightning round. We appreciate it. You got three bags right behind you, sir. You got the green one, the pink one. Go ahead and choose one of those three swag bags. And why don't you give it to Drew, and Drew's going to go ahead and break it out there and let us know.
I remember this from last time. There were like toy soldiers in there.
Hell yeah. Let's see.
There was a dollar.
Oh, you got a dollar last time?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, that's good.
This time you got a Nightglow necklace.
Nice.
The color of the necklace is pink, and it glows for hours.
Nice.
I want to take some psychedelics and put this on.
We have Treasure Hunt Movie. Enron, the smartest guys in the room.
Oh,
it's
documentary.
A very good documentary about some very shady economic practices.
Documentary about Ken Lay and all his shit.
Yeah, I hate those guys.
That'll make you hate him even more.
Yeah, it's a really good documentary.
We have a one-piece coupon caddy, and I'm pretty sure that's, what is it, a leopard? A
looks
giraffe?
Like leopard print.
I don't know, some kind of weird leopard print.
You can put coupons
it's a
there.
Coupon caddy.
I'm going to put something in there, but it probably won't be coupons.
We got you a six-pack of non-slip gripper pads.
There you go. So stop slipping around.
I am a little slippery. I am a little slippery.
Get some grip.
Got some WWE bandages for fingers, elbows, and knees.
Nice.
Assorted bandages with wrestlers on them.
That's awesome.
Gonna have a Slim Jim.
Oh, is there a Macho Man in there?
And Cinema Crespo Diso stickers.
Enjoy. Awesome. Those are the best of the whole pack.
Enjoy
was
the stickers.
The stickers. Good fellows.
Dig it. Dig the prize pack.
There you go,
Tom
sir.
The Beer Guy. Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. That brings us to the end of episode 52, the one-year anniversary show sponsored by Orange Blossom Pilsner. Tom, thank you so much for coming on.
You guys are so awesome. You're holding it down week.
Oh,
and I hope nothing but the best.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Same to you. Same to all. Best success for everything you got going. We're super, super excited about all the great news you dropped on
us
today.
You guys are driven by passion.
It's a similar passion.
Indeed. And that's, that's what life's about. Find something you're into and run with it.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, you encourage people to drink good beer, not just settle for the Super Bowl beers. I try to encourage people not just settle for the mainstream movies. I see us as kindred spirits in what we're doing.
Life's too short.
Life is too short to just take crap and be happy with it.
Yeah, make the most of your every day.
Absolutely. So there you go, people. Thank you so much. That was episode 52. We'll be back next week, episode 53, the first episode of the whole new year, Drew.
Yeah, Crespedizo.
We're going to start that shit over, buddy.
Volume 2.
You ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
I'm ready for a new record.
I'm ready to drink
some more. And it's Juice Cogburn versus the world.
No, Juice Cogburn versus the world, buddy. Are we going to start that shit over, or are we going to go back to zero, or are we going to just keep going?
I think we should, every year, we should flip it over and start back at nil.
So
and
you then, ended the first then, year
well,
at
no,
tied?
And then that way, you know, we can kind of see how I did as the years progressed.
Interesting. All right, well, we'll decide by next week what we're going to do with that. Thank you for downloading us on iTunes, Stitcher, aircheck.us, chriscrespo.com. Make sure you go there, chriscrespo.com. Yeah, I think that's the first time I mentioned the whole episode. So if you're listening to the end, thank you. We appreciate it. And all right, there you go. We're done.
Happy New Year, bitches.